Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. And I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Now bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right, all right, all right. Yeah, it's Nick DeGilio and the Nick DeGilio Show here on a Wednesday morning. And that's Wild Card Wednesday. If you want, you pick the songs that we play on the show when we come back from news and we come back from break. And there's a theme. There's a different theme every night / morning. And this is Wild Card Wednesday, which means any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we've got Neil McQueenie is going to join us. He is the owner of Midway Dispensary on Archer Avenue in Chicago. And we're going to talk about just how the dispensary sold nearly $40 million worth of cannabis in January. Because January 1st obviously became legal. And he's going to tell us all about how that's affecting the dispensary and, you know, what it's like to actually run a medical and a marijuana dispensary. And so there you go. We are going to talk about, you know, for people who might not be from here, Old Chicago was a very special and very weird place. Amazon just paid $50 million to the former Old Chicago Amusement Park and Mega Mall site. And that, to me, I find that baffling and weird and crazy. We also have a 7-foot alligator sneaks into a Florida home. Which, it being Florida, is not a surprise, but we'll talk about if you have an animal story. Have you ever dealt with a pesky animal in your house? That and more. Right now, let's talk to Annie Wilder. She is the author of three popular true ghost story books. Her latest book is called Trucker Ghost Stories. And we know we have a lot of truckers who listen to this show, and I wonder if they've ever had a little paranormal moment. But Annie's the author, and let's say hello. Hello, Annie.
Hi, Nick. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, sure. Of course. Of course. When did you, have you always been interested in the paranormal? How long has that been around?
Yeah, I have been. And I think partly because I was raised Catholic. And so growing up, all the people that I looked up to and respected, my parents and my grandparents and my teachers at the Catholic school, talked about a world of spirits and saints, and there were ways to communicate through prayers and novenas and petitions, and it just seemed like the spirit world was this interesting place that had its own rules and mores, I guess, its own culture.
Yeah.
And then I was very lucky to have my parents are awesome. My dad passed away in 2018, but he was a Montana farmer. And my mom was St. Paul raised. And so my dad kind of instilled in us the love of the outdoors and nature and hard work. And my mom, who also worked very hard, kind of, you know, instilled in us a love of reading and books and dreams and art and mystical things. We talked about our dreams. My mom's mom was Irish, and she talked to us kids about fairies and leprechauns and the death knock and magic and all sorts of cool things. So, yes, from the time I've been small child, I have been very interested in the spirit world.
It seems like the path was laid out for you at a very young age, Annie.
Yeah, I feel lucky. I feel like I got the best of both worlds, like a grounded hard work ethic and sense of decency, and yet a real awareness of an interest in the invisible world as well.
What was your what was your first encounter with a paranormal encounter?
Well, when I was very young, age 7 or younger, and actually throughout my life, but the first thing that I remember seeing was yellow eyes watching me at night.
Oh.
And they looked like animal eyes, not human eyes, but these kind of elongated yellow eyes.
Oh.
And I could see them. Yeah, it was spooky, but then nothing ever happened, and nothing bad ever happened. So it just became something that I was aware of. And I did see two ghosts when I was a little kid. One was at my grandparents' house, and I was upstairs brushing my teeth and getting ready for bed, and my sister was also staying at my grandparents' house, and they had like 5 bedrooms upstairs in this long hallway that kind of was like a horseshoe shape. And the bathroom door was partly ajar, and I was brushing my teeth, and I saw who I thought was my sister running past with a white nightgown on, just like, past the door. And I yelled her name out because it scared me. And then when she didn't answer, I got this really bad feeling, hot, you know, it's like, and I looked out and there was nobody out there, and I ran downstairs, and she was sitting in the living room with my grandparents eating ice cream and watching Johnny Carson.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, ooh, not in pajamas. So that was one ghost. And then I saw another when I was 8 or 9, when we lived out in the Black Hills. And that was a spirit that took the shape of like the outline of a man floating in the hallway. And I was home alone, which is pretty weird because I have 7 brothers and sisters. And I was just sick that day. So my mom had gone into town to pick up the other kids from school. And when I saw the man, I ran outside and held on to our dog, you know, for protection until my mom got home.
Yeah. Wow. Right. Annie Wilder, we continue this conversation. She is the author of 3 popular true ghost story books, lives in a haunted house, which we will discuss, and also the latest book is called Trucker Ghost Stories. If you've had a paranormal event, or if you're a trucker and you've dealt with some paranormal stuff or ghosts on the dark highways and byways, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN.
Trucking, got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking like the doodah man. Together, more or less.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. Tom just picked a very clever bump, because not only is it about trucking, it's by the Grateful Dead. So that covers both things. Annie Wilder is the author of 3 popular true ghost story books. Her third book is called Trucker Ghost Stories. Annie, how often do you have people tell you about their experiences?
All the time.
Yeah.
That's one of the benefits of writing books there. I used to work at Llewellyn Publishing, and so they publish a lot of books on metaphysical and paranormal things. So, yeah, it's one of the things that makes my life fun and interesting. I hear so many stories. I actually had to just kind of narrow down, trying to just get a few to tell you tonight from the Trucker Ghost Story book, because there's so many stories, but I have some lined up whenever you're ready.
Oh, you know, so. I'd love to hear. We will. We'll definitely get into that. And if anybody has some paranormal stories that they want to share with us, it's 312-981-7200. And all of our, you know, because of the hours that I'm on the air, Annie, I do have a lot of truckers who listen to the show. You know, because
that's so cool.
Because they drive through, you know, the late night and into the morning, and so they listen to the show. And if anybody's had those kinds of experiences, before we jump into, you know, some of your stories from the Trucker Ghost Story book, there's a legendary local ghost here in the Chicago area named Resurrection Mary. Have you ever heard of Resurrection Mary?
I have. We actually have a story about Resurrection Mary in the book.
Well,
I would like to hear. I would like to hear. It's in the legends and lore section of the book, but I would love to hear your take on it.
Well, it's such a it's such a legendary ghost. Every year around Halloween, I've been hosting a radio show now for over 20 years, and every year around Halloween, the Resurrection Mary story comes up, and everybody talks about it. It's near Resurrection Cemetery. I'm trying to remember. Tom, can you look up what suburb that is? I should know this. We've only talked about this a thousand times.
Willow Springs.
It was Willow Springs. Okay. And so the reports are that there are people who drive down, usually guys who are driving down, and they see this woman who's like in a prom dress.
Yes.
Looking for a ride, and they let her in, and then she disappears when they get to a certain part near Resurrection Cemetery, and sometimes leaves a puddle. Sometimes leaves a puddle of water on the seat. She always gets in the back seat and doesn't say anything, and leaves a puddle of water and never says a word. Like she's in the car and it's eerily silent.
Yes.
And then the rumor is that she died in a car accident on that stretch of road and hitchhikes and is still looking for a way to get home. That's the story. And it is, as you've included it in your book, Annie, but here locally, it's one that we talk about all the time.
That's so cool. Well, I think that these legends must meet some need in us. And I actually I'm open-minded about the spirit world. I believe that there are lots of ways that the spirit world and just different dimensions are interesting places that there's some cross-communication among us. But the point about the puddle of water, I think, is really interesting. I can't remember if that was in the story that's in my book, that particular point. But I mean, when you think about, you've heard about poltergeists, and one of the ways that they manifest or make their presence known is a puddle of water.
Mm.
So that's kind of an interesting twist on it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a form of spirit energy.
You know, here's a question for you, Annie, because I've heard the Resurrection Mary story. I can't tell you how many times over the years. And sometimes details are different. Sometimes they change. How do these stories morph? Because when you tell a story or a legend over the course of a long time, over many years, some people just add details that weren't there before. How often do you have to go back and check to see if these stories have morphed into something different?
Oh, my gosh. All the time. In fact, with my own, my second book was a book of true family ghost stories, and I have a family that writes down, you know, we have written down stories. I had stories that were back from 150 years ago. And even with that, if I ask three different people, so what was the thing where great grandma met great grandpa back in the 1870s and blah, blah, blah. And everyone will have a slightly different version of it, because I think that's just how human memory works. And some things meant more to some people, and some people thought something happened. And it's part of the challenge and the fun of sorting out a story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I have actually, I just want to pop in, one of my favorite stories in the book is also a vanishing hitchhiker story.
Okay.
It was contributed by Christopher O'Brien, and he lived out in the San Luis Valley in Colorado for many years, mm-hmm. and wrote a bunch of books, and I think he's got a radio show or a podcast out. But he did a bunch of investigating. This is when that cattle mutilations and animal mutilations were really going on. And I have my dad's cousin lives out there right by the UFO watchtower, actually.
Uh-huh.
And we have been out there, and there are weird things going on in the sky all the time. But anyway, so Christopher O'Brien's story was that it's called Hitchhiker in Red. Yeah, Hitchhiker in Red. But he was investigating cattle mutilations, and he was talking to a local police officer, police chief from one of the towns, and he asked if he had any other, if there were other things going on. And he said the police chief was hesitated and then said, well, yes, he said, my uncle had a weird experience that he insisted on filing a police report, and we really discouraged him. We didn't want him to do it, but he did, so it's public record. But anyway, the uncle, and he said his uncle was a sober man, you know, hardworking, responsible.
Yeah.
He was driving home late one night, and there was a woman walking along the road in a red dress, and he stopped to give her a ride because she was out in the middle of nowhere. And same kind of thing. She got in the truck, and he had a bench seat in his pickup truck, and she just sat down and stared straight ahead and didn't say anything. And he was just starting to ask her, the uncle, why she was out so late at night. And it was then that he noticed, and this is a quote, that she had cloven hooves and goat's legs.
Oh, man.
And then she just started out just, oh, isn't that awesome? Just so spooky. Oh, my gosh. That one just killed me. It was so good.
Yeah.
And then she dematerialized, which I guess I would want the person to
at
that point.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that's creepy. That is creepy. Annie Wilder is the author of very popular true ghost story books, including the new one, which is Trucker Ghost Stories. And we're hearing a lot of fun ghost stories here. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. We did get a text in from a listener, Annie.
Cool.
Tom says, what's Annie's take on TV shows like Ghost Adventures and other shows like it? Do they seem real or are they staged?
I think that they are at their core real.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Ghost Adventures. I guess maybe I've seen a few episodes. We kind of didn't have cable at the time that that one came out. I used to watch Paranormal State all the time. I loved that show.
Yeah.
And my friend Dave Schrader is on a new paranormal show, and he will want to kick my butt for not remembering the name of it. But Dave Schrader is on a new paranormal show, and he's a really talented guy. But I think that my impression is that they are really doing actual work, and that there really is something going on in the places that they go to. I do know that when people are filming TV shows, they're looking for dramatic, you know, happenings. I don't think that they probably fake stuff, but I think that editing is done and stuff in a way to get the most dramatic impact, and that's part of the nature of a TV show.
Yeah,
and it seems to work.
His show is called The Holzer Files.
Thank you, gosh,
yeah.
David. The Holzer Files.
The Holzer Files. That's it. Yeah.
I can tell you that I have talked to or I get contacted by TV producers quite often, and one of my hopes for Truck of Ghost Stories was that it would get turned into a TV show. And after pursuing it with three different production companies and getting to various stages in the process that then fell apart, I just was like, I'm going to wait till somebody comes to me. And just let it go. But I do know from talking to different producers and to camera crew who worked with a show that was very popular, that both the producer that I've spoken with and somebody who was well known on one of the shows ended up with real life paranormal attachments or problems, you know, activity that followed them home. So that, as I understand, they were able to deal with. But so it is real. And I think that it's good to have a healthy respect for the astral realm.
Got it. Annie Wilder, we're chatting with Annie Wilder. She is the author of three popular true ghost story books. Her latest is called Trucker Ghost Story. She's got more really spooky stories to tell. And if you have any paranormal stories, if you're a trucker, 312-981-7200. And Nick DiGilio Show continues on 720 WGN.
All the times have come.
Nick DiGilio show continues on 720 WGN on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday is going to start a little bit later on. We will have another round of Know Your Onion. That is when Tom reads you news headlines, and you have to figure out whether they are real or from the satirical newspaper The Onion, because the real news nowadays is just so strange that sometimes you can't tell the difference between a real headline and an Onion headline. So we'll get a couple of contestants in, have them play a full round later on. That's after 3:30. We got a Blackhawks Express to play from the game from last night. And Neil McQueenie is going to join us. He's the owner of the Midway Dispensary on Archer Avenue in Chicago to talk about this, the phenomenal success of the sale of cannabis in Illinois. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Annie Wilder is the author of many books, including Trucker Ghost Stories. Annie, what do you think it is about why people are the roadways are prone to some of these paranormal experiences? Because there are so many stories that are paranormally related that happen on the road, and especially on the dark, you know, like highways.
Yeah, that's exactly why I wanted truckers. I thought that would be such a cool mashup of paranormal and like the uber masculine profession, but
yeah.
Also like they're the ones who are out there, you know.
And yeah, yeah.
It's just like if you go on YouTube or check out these things, the what do they call them, trail cams that hunters use?
Yeah,
that's catching a lot of stuff too. It's like that's very cool. I mean, that was unexpected. I think part of it is because it's nighttime. I think part of it is because when you're driving, a lot of times you're in somewhat of an altered state anyway, like you're in a kind of a beta state rather than an alpha state. Wait, am I getting that mixed up? Let's see. I actually looked it up. Yeah, no, you drive in an alpha state. So beta is the normal consciousness, and then alpha is the one that's a little more relaxed.
Right.
And theta, and if you're driving like tons and tons of hours, I've done it only a few times, but it's really easy to get into a very altered state, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that it is possible, I'm not a scientist, but I think that it is possible that when we're in altered states, it's not only that we are hallucinating. I think that we might just be able to, we might have the ability to perceive things that we otherwise don't perceive.
Right. Right. And so, and so a lot of these truckers are out there driving 30, 40 hours at a crack. You know what I mean?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I
can't even imagine. Well, they talk about white line fever and what's the other one, like driving hypnosis or so that's what I think. I think that those are factors that contribute to people having these experiences at night.
Yeah.
A lot of the stories in my book take place at night. And by the way, it was so much fun to get these stories and gather these stories. And I have a huge respect for truckers. I dedicated my book to a trucker that I knew when I was a grade school kid, I guess junior high.
Mm.
I worked for my dad. He was the manager of a sand plant. And so I would make, in the summer times, I would type invoices and make coffee and sweep the floor. And so one of these truckers was named Bill Sykes, and he told me a really good ghost story. And so I dedicated my book to him. I tried to get in touch with him, but unfortunately he had passed away by the time my book came out. But yeah, so, I've talked so much, I forgot your original question.
No, that's okay. You already answered it. And we have another text that's come in from the 224 area code. It says, "Hi, I'm a security officer and worked many haunted hotels, but the one I remember, I was sitting in the hallway of a hotel and my chair started spinning. There was no breeze or air blowing. I ran down the stairs, told the maintenance man to go upstairs. He sat in the chair. It started spinning one way and then another. He jumped out of the chair and ran down the stairs and quit."
Right. Yes. Smart guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It. Quit.
There's so much weird stuff. I that's why I like it when people talk about it. And I actually love when regular, ordinary people tell their weird experiences.
Yeah. Annie Wilder is who we're talking to. Her latest book is called Trucker Ghost Stories. 312-981-7200. Here's Big Ed. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, Nick. Annie. I just want to say something. I don't talk about this very much, but I don't know if this is in your topic, but I was in bed one night, and I was pretty sick. And honest to God, I think I was dying. And I was going down this long tube, and I see this hand comes up and says, "Not yet." And when I heard that, "Not yet," immediately woke up, and I was like, "All right, what's going on here? What happened?" It was the weirdest thing. Honestly, God, it was the weirdest thing.
So it was kind of like someone telling you that that you shouldn't die yet, even though you were very, very sick at the time. That's fat. You've talked about near death experiences, I'm assuming, in some of your stories.
Yeah, actually, my uncle Jim, who lives out on the Montana border, got electrocuted on a job site. The guy who was right next to him was carrying a ladder that he walked into a power line.
Oh.
And my uncle got electrocuted. He flew, and actually the paramedics or somebody said the only reason he probably lived is because he hit a beam so hard that it restarted his heart.
Oh.
It blew a hole out of his out the bottom of his foot. But he woke up, and he said he did feel like he was in a tunnel, and he saw spirits. He couldn't identify who they were, but he saw spirits around.
Yeah.
And then he said, just like a steak that's underdone at a restaurant, he got sent back.
That's how he put it, right?
Yeah, that's how he put it. He's a pretty funny guy. And then he said when he came to and he saw all these guys from the crew standing around looking at him, he said, "Which one I can? I don't know if I can cuss a little bit on this show or shouldn't. But which one of you son of SOBs?
Yeah.
Which one of you SOBs gave me CPR?"
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "Nobody did. We thought you were dead."
Oh man.
So, yeah, but it was the fact that he hit the steel beam with so much force that his heart restarted.
That's a crazy story.
So. So it sounds like Ed may have had the same kind of
experience.
Near-death experience, yeah.
We're talking with Annie Wilder. His latest book is called Trucker Ghost Stories here on 720 WGN. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, 312-981-7200. Here's another local haunted story here, Annie. And my details around this one are a little bit more fuzzy. But Danny, a listener, texted in, "Has Annie ever heard of Bachelor's Grove in Midlothian, Illinois, off of the Turnpike?"
No.
Bachelor's Grove is in... Tom, can you Google this and we can get a few more details so that we can tell Annie about it? Once again, Annie, when we do talk about ghost stories, local ghost stories here in the Illinois-Chicagoland area, Bachelor's Grove comes up a lot. It's supposedly one of the most haunted places in Illinois. Lots of really creepy and scary stories have come out of Bachelor's Grove. Tom, did you get any... info about the haunted Bachelor's Grove?
Yeah, so Bachelor's Grove goes back to about the 1800s, a little early 1800s, and many strange things have been reported there, such as floating orbs of light, phantom vehicles, mysterious black dogs that appear and then disappear, and it's often been reported that it was a dumping ground for victims of the Chicago crime syndicate, so people like Al Capone.
Right,
so
right,
there's
right,
a lot
right.
of bad things have gone down in Bachelor's Grove, Illinois.
Yeah, Bachelor's Grove, Illinois. It's really, every time we talk about local haunted spots, Bachelor's Grove comes up like near the top of the list. You should read up on that one, Annie. I think you'd really love some of the stories. Yeah.
I just made a note of it. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Adam Seltzer.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So he does ghost tours in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know of him. I don't think I ever met him, but he wrote a book that we published when I worked at Llewellyn called Ghosts of Chicago.
Right.
Ghosts of Chicago. Yeah. So, no, I can't believe that I haven't heard of Bachelor's Grove.
Yeah.
Because... Okay, so that's something to check out.
For sure.
We are going to be going down to a small town in Illinois later this summer. It's where my husband grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll have to take a swing through.
Yeah.
If I can convince him. Bachelor's Grove.
Bachelor's Grove, Midlothian, Illinois. Okay, Annie Wilder is the guest. We continue our conversation at 720 WGN, the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. Coming up a little bit later on, after the 2 o'clock news, we'll be joined by Neil McQueenie, who's the owner of Midway Dispensary, and we're going to talk about just how incredible the sale of cannabis has gone, and much more. Dispensary just basically ran out of product. We'll get his thoughts on that and the law and everything. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are talking with Annie Wilder. And Annie, your latest book is called Trucker Ghost Stories, and you told us one that was pretty creepy. Can you share a couple of more?
Sure. Okay, so here's another. There's so many good stories in this book, but I just pulled a few out. So okay. This one is called Soldier Ghost in Texas, and it's by Barb Dexter. And she was, her husband, now ex-husband, was a trucker, and they were going through Texas, and they were out in the middle of nowhere, and he didn't like to pay for a hotel, so they always just pulled over and slept in the truck. And she said they were in the truck and sleeping, and it was like somebody started, first I think they heard knocks on the truck, and he got out, shone his flashlight out and whatever, and then the truck started rocking, like somebody was pushing it, and he jumped out and had his gun, I guess, and a flashlight, and then he said, "Hey, can you come out here? See if you hear this." And she came out, and they were in the middle of nowhere, and you could see that there was nothing. There was a woods a little ways away.
Yeah.
But they heard what sounded like people talking in the distance, but they couldn't see anything like tents or a campfire or lights. And so they walked, you know, he's like, I want to see what this is. So they walked. She didn't want to go towards the voices, but she didn't want to stay alone in the truck either.
Sure, sure.
So she walked with them, and she said as they got closer, the voices were sounding like they were coming from different places. Like some were, they thought they were walking toward the voices, and all of a sudden they seemed like they were someplace else. And then there's some, like, they're over here. And that was weird. And then when they, at some point, they realized that it wasn't the sound of, like, people talking, having conversations. It was chanting.
Oh.
And that was one of those moments, too. It was like, oh, my gosh. And she said they both decided to head back to the truck. And they got in the truck, and they saw what looked like just a crowd of half-invisible soldiers walking in front of their truck. And they decided to just get out of there and drive away, which they did. She said she knew that he was freaked out because he actually drove them to a hotel, and they slept in a hotel. Okay, so the next morning, they got up, and they're going to continue on their way. And he came in, she's getting ready in the hotel room, and he had gone out to the truck. And he came in, and he said, "You've got to come out here and look at this." And she went out, and all over the truck, hundreds of handprints covered with a light sheen of dust. And she said they had washed the truck.
Oh,
and,
man.
This was... it creeped me out super bad. Yeah. So that was one of the good ones. There's so many. Okay, here's another one. This is called Skinwalker in Arizona.
Okay.
And the fellow who contributed it is named Lee Hanawu. I like to give people credit.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, let me everybody know, Annie Wilder is who we're talking to, and the book is called Trucker Ghost Stories, and it's her third book about ghost stories. Okay.
Yeah, okay, and I let everybody keep their own copyright, so if there's any TV show, because there are a lot of TV shows that come, and they want to have people tell their story, and this way people can just go on and tell their story, and, you know,
oh, that's good.
For them.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, okay. So Lee is half Navajo and half Hopi. And this story took place on the reservation where his grandma lived in Arizona. He said he was 14 years old at the time, and his little brother was like 9. And he said his little brother, who is now a soldier, told him that he, I mean, now it's 15 years after this happened, but he said had never saw anything that scared him as much as what they saw that night, what they experienced. Okay, so they are spending the summer with their grandma. They love being with their grandma, and he said that his grandma occasionally hired one of the local guys to do work around the house, and this fellow didn't have a driver's license or anything, so she let Lee, who was 14, take the pickup truck and drive the guy back to his place, which was like 4 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So Lee and his younger brother and their dog got in the truck. The guy who did the repairs and the dog sat in the back of the truck, you know, the cab, or not the cab, the, gosh, I'm spacing it, but the back of the truck.
Yeah.
And then he and his brother were in the truck. So they drove the guy,
they were in the flatbed then.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
I should know that. Okay, so they dropped the guy off, and they're driving back, and he said it was, you know, a super dusty road, washboarding, all that. He said that the sun was setting and the sky was really pretty, and he noticed at some point some movement in this scrubby thing beside the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he assumed it was one of the sheep because there were free roaming sheep on the reservation.
Right.
And he, when it didn't like dart out in front of the car, he stopped thinking about it. He just kept driving. And all of a sudden, his dog started barking, and he looked in the rearview mirror and just felt terror because he saw this thing that was tall and skinny, covered with hair, kind of human but not human,
mm-hmm.
running after their truck.
Oh, boy.
And his brother looked, and he saw it too, and he said he started driving as fast as he could on the washboard road, and his brother was screaming and said, "It's catching up, and it's coming up your side." And he said he was so scared he could hardly breathe. And he thought they were going to die because this thing was basically on top of the truck, like it can keep up with the truck. And he had no idea what it was. It was like not any animal. There's no two-legged animal that runs on two legs after vehicles. And so then he saw another car coming the other way, which never happens on the res. Well, I'm sorry. At that part, I might be mixing up with another story. They did make it back to their grandma's house. They jumped out of the truck. They ran in, and he said they told their grandma what they'd seen. And she said that she didn't seem surprised. And she said it was a skinwalker, and that is like, it's basically like bad magic, shape-shifting, and that there's evil magic in the world too, and that's what they had encountered. And he said like they were terrified that night. The windows, like he said he didn't drive again on the reservation at night until he was 21.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended his story with, you know, just a little bit of speculating. Like he said, you know, I know people might not believe this, or they might think it's a myth. He said, but I believe if there is good in the world and there's good power, there's also the opposite.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, talked about like the importance of just being respectful and not messing around with stuff. Not that they had messed around with stuff,
right.
But just acknowledging the existence of that.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty cool story.
Skinwalker is a creepy name for any kind of being.
I know.
So creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Annie Wilder is the author of Trucker Ghost Stories. And Annie, before we get you out of here, you live in a haunted place and you have haunted tea parties. You host haunted tea parties in your home. Tell me about that.
Well, I lived in a haunted house for 25 years.
Okay.
We just moved in December, and I'm very sad about leaving my house because I was planning to live there forever. I've written a little bit about it on my Facebook page, which you can get to through my website, anniewilder.com. We moved to, I hope to again offer at least, I call them spirited events, and that's, I had haunted tea parties for years because after my book came out, so many people wanted to see the house that I decided I would come up with something, and I thought a tea party was old-fashioned. It was an old Victorian house.
Yeah,
awesome house.
Right.
So we are now, we did leave our house. We are in a town a little further down the river, 20 miles away, and we have another Victorian house that is fabulous. Everyone has asked me if it's haunted. We do feel that there is some definite house energy here,
yeah.
And I have been so kind of with the move and just a lot of things going on. I feel like I haven't been as tuned in, but I did come down the other night and sleep on the couch because I actually was so wide awake I needed to come down and read, not have a light on upstairs.
Right, right.
And as I was down here, the house made so many weird noises that I was thinking, like, okay, yes, this place is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a dream where two young girls in clothes from, like, maybe the 1940s or 50s were standing over looking at me. And I woke up, and one of them said, oh, she can finally see us.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, that sounds like that sounds like a promising start, Annie, I got to tell you. So,
I do like living in a haunted house with friendly ghosts.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Annie Wilder is the author of some popular true ghost story books. Trucker Ghost Stories is the latest. And your website, as you said, is anniewilder.com.
Yep,
AnnieWilder.com. You can go through, go check that out and look it up, all her books and some of the stories, and you can link up to her Facebook page as well. Annie, it was so much fun talking to you and telling some really great, creepy, and fun stories.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Good.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Too.
All right, Annie Wilder, Trucker Ghost Stories is her latest book. Check out AnnieWilder.com. All right. That was some creepy stuff, picking up that hitchhiker when she's got hooves and, like, goat legs. I don't need that in my life. All right. So Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We'll get to the newsroom in a couple of minutes.
I hear your mother was the top of the sticks. Nothing that your daddy wouldn't do for kids. Never done a thing worthwhile. Evil woman, child.
Yeah. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. And, we're live in the Skyline Studio here till 4 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. And, that was a Wild Card Wednesday request?
Yep.
Who requested that?
That's coming to us from the 630, a little Lucretia McEvil.
Yes.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears. All right. Do you remember Old Chicago? Now, Tom, this was gone way before your time. It opened in 1975 and it closed in 1980. And in between that time, I went there many, many, many times. This story is from the Chicago Tribune. I'm having a hard time believing. I don't know why I find this story so strange. It's because I had been to Old Chicago many times. The idea of Old Chicago was that it was an indoor amusement park so that you can go any time of year. You can really go to amusement parks in January in Chicago. So, and the amusement park was in the middle of what would be surrounded by malls, or would be stores. And it was in Bolingbrook, and there was a big dome in the middle of it. One of the main problems was with Old Chicago was that it was kind of a dump. And that there were no anchor stores. They were all like weird little stores. The place smelled weird. I think they had like a candy shop in one of the places, and they made cotton candy and it stunk up the place, and they sold peanuts and things like that. But Old Chicago is definitely the pure 70s. And we went there a ton. And here's the story. The reason I bring this up: online retail giant Amazon has paid more than $50 million for the former site of Old Chicago, an indoor amusement park and mall in Bolingbrook, that predated massive experimental shopping centers like Minnesota's Mall of America. Amazon's purchase likely paves the way for the site to become the latest in an already vast network of Amazon distribution centers throughout the Chicago area. So if you've been to Old Chicago, I would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for talk or text. It's just, I had no idea. I thought that that building, they closed in 1980. I thought that that building had been demolished. Or maybe they just bought the land. I don't know. But the fact that Old Chicago, the place where Old Chicago was, garnered $50 million. I don't know why I find that just so stunning. So we had a great time. My friends and I had a great time going to Old Chicago. I went there between the ages of 10 and like 13, and it was a blast. They had the first loop-to-loop roller coaster called the Chicago Loop. And they had a bunch of rides. They had, carnival games. They had food. They had a haunted house, a year-round haunted house. And I loved it. I mean, it was a cheesy place, but I loved it. The problem was that nobody was spending any money outside of going to the amusement park because the stores were so crummy. They had, like, really terrible stores in Old Chicago. And I remember back in the 70s in that time, iron-on decal t-shirts were really, really popular. And they had t-shirt shops where you could pick a decal off of the wall. They had all the designs, off of the wall. A lot of them were like 70s albums and were wacky sayings like keep on truckin'. And they would iron it right in front of you. They would have a press right there, and they would iron it right in front of you. And most of the time you would get your name put on the back. And they had like three of those shops, like the iron-on decal shop. There were like three of those. So nobody was spending any money. The stores were closing down. The stores that surrounded Old Chicago were closing down. Lots of people were going to the amusement park and hanging out and having some fun in there, but that's not where the money was going to really be made. And, people were paying rent for those stores, and they couldn't make their rent because nobody was buying anything because the stores were so crummy. And so as a result, it was only open for 5 years, close to six when it closed. But I will say I went there many times, and I had a blast. Every time I went to Old Chicago, we had a blast. Many Old Chicago stories. 630 said, I rode an elephant at Old Chicago. I was maybe 4 years old. See that? You could ride elephants. Where else in Bolingbrook can you ride an elephant? I don't think there are a lot of places in Bolingbrook where you can ride an elephant, but at Old Chicago, you could ride an elephant. But I fully admit that it was a pretty tacky place. The amusement park was fun. It was gaudy and weird, but it was fun and it was great for kids. But everything that surrounded it, all of those stores, all of the places around it, just not good. The building itself was ugly. Like, if you looked at it from the outside, it was ugly. But it was 1975. Lots of ugly things in 1975. So, $50 million. Amazon's redevelopment of the property would bring a 21st century use to a site best known for the short-lived heyday of Old Chicago, which opened to fanfare in 1975 but closed in 1980. The venue had amusement rides, circus performers, and a concert venue, but it failed after running up costs, struggling to keep visitors coming back. It was demolished. The massive Old Chicago structure featured a 16-story dome that was demolished in 1986. The idea of combining shops, amusement park rides, and live entertainment under a single roof was innovative when Old Chicago opened in 1975. Canada's West Edmonton Mall and the Mall of America, which combined shopping with attractions like rides, mini golf, escape rooms, aquariums, wouldn't open until 1981 and 1992, respectively. But Old Chicago was troubled from the get-go, said Neil Stern, senior partner with the Chicago-based retail consultancy McMillan Doodle, who recalls that the indoor amusement park as a kid, it was never economically viable. The $20 million, 500-square-foot building cracked under the construction, leading to cost overruns. A trapeze artist fell to his death in front of hundreds of spectators. Oh, man. I didn't know that. A trapeze artist fell to his death? Six Flags Great America opened just 1 year later in Gurnee, creating big competition. It had roughly 200 shops. They were designed to host small boutiques, not big-name brand destination stores. And after 2 years, 2 years after opening, occupancy fell to 54%. So at one point, you know, I mean, just 2 years in, all the shops were half empty. And I remember that. I remember there like nothing being, you know, like you walk past a storefront and nothing's there. Walk past another one, nothing's there. Then there's a T-shirt shop. And then you walk past, you know. Old Chicago drew 2 million visitors in its first year, but just 900,000 in 1977. The Tribune reported that at the time. Old Chicago's original owners sought bankruptcy protection roughly a year after opening. New owners invested $6 million in improvements, but it closed in 1980. I'm feeling sad now about Old Chicago, because I have a lot of great memories attached to it. So $50 million, and Amazon's going to open up another building there. Where Old Chicago used to be. So, Tom, you've been to the Mall of America, right?
Yeah, I recently got the chance to visit it.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It's a very large and domineering place.
No, it's a terrifying place, quite frankly. And it had a different feel than, because I'm not a good in malls. I don't like malls very much. And I'm not a big shopping guy, so I like to get in. If I'm going to a mall, I like to get in and get out as quickly as possible. And I freaked out when we were in the Mall of America. And I freaked out. But Old Chicago had a different feel. It didn't feel like a real mall. It just felt like a dump. It was just a dump with a roller coaster in the middle of it. Much more charming feel than the terrifying feeling of the Mall of America. So, all right, well... We are going to be talking about some crazy amusement parks that are that have closed or are still open, and we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. If you've been to Old Chicago and have some Old Chicago memories, yeah, call us up. 312-981-7200. Take me back to Chicago and lay my soul. Nick DeGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning. Yeah, and we've got another round of Know Your Onion. That's a little game that we play. Tom's your host. He'll read you a news headline, and you have to guess whether it is real or The Onion, and The Onion being a satirical newspaper that writes comedy. Yeah, so... We'll do a round of that. We got a Blackhawks Express from last night's game as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And also coming up after 2 o'clock, Neil McQueenie is going to join us. He is the owner of the Midway Dispensary on Archer in Chicago. And we're going to talk about how dispensaries ran out of cannabis and how, you know, Illinois dispensaries sold nearly $40 million worth of it just in January alone. So we were just talking about Old Chicago, which was this crazy indoor amusement park that was in Bolingbrook that I went to a ton of times. I'm looking at, I just Google imaged Old Chicago, and the memories have just come flooding back. There are a lot of great pictures from Old Chicago, from the outdoor with the dome to the indoor of with the rides and the malls in the mall. See, the idea was that it would be, you know, the world's first indoor amusement park surrounded by a mall. But unfortunately, the mall itself failed massively. There were no anchor stores or, you know, they were small boutiques or really terrible stores. And people stopped coming because there wasn't really, because the idea was go drop the kids off, you know, in the amusement park and you can shop all day, but in terrible shops. that's the problem. 312-981-7200, and we're going to talk about some ridiculous theme parks too. Here's Rick on WGN. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, Nick. Hey, you were talking about Old Chicago.
Yeah.
And got to go there three times. I grew up in Valparaiso. We had two junior highs and the combined marching band. We went over there and marched around the mall in the spring and then got to go into the amusement park, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, I remember the memory too, but currently I live in Lyle, and I've actually been down there. There's actually the approach road. It's still called Ochicago Drive. It's still there.
Is that right?
And yes. The road called Old Chicago Drive that approaches the building is still there. And the shell of the outer building may still be there, but definitely the dome and everything else, that's torn down.
That's gone, yeah. Wow. I can't believe it's been vacant since 1980.
I don't know if it has. It may have been used as warehouse.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah.
You know,
yeah. But man,
an open space for storage and warehouse.
$50 million, though, Rick, man. That's a lot of money.
Well, that blew me away.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense that would be the dollar amount.
$50 million. Man. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well,
but another thing, in 78, for whatever reason, I remember, you mentioned a little bit ago that there was a concert venue in there.
Yeah.
And the guy who happened to be there singing the day when we marched, it was Bobby Rydell, the guy from the 50s.
Oh, sure.
I didn't know who he was, but the chaperones knew who he was.
Yeah, the chaperones did. Wow, lots of great memories. Thanks, Rick.
You bet.
All right, man. Old Chicago, man. The memories are rushing back. I'm still looking at some of the Google images here on the computer. It's such a tacky-looking place. And you know what, man? So they're showing like people walking through and waiting in line and stuff. Oh, the clothes. Oh, the clothes. We're talking 1975 to 1980, a very special time in fashion. Maybe people dressed up when they went to Old Chicago. Let's get all gussied up and go to Old Chicago. I will say this. I remember loving the Haunted House. I thought the Haunted House was awesome. I went, every time we would go into the Haunted House. It was really cool. And it was year-round. It wasn't just around like in October. That was a year-round Haunted House. Concert venue. I never really watched any concerts there. I know I saw Magic. I know I saw a Magic show there. But yeah. Oh, and by the way, I do want to mention, if you would like to see some lovely footage of Old Chicago, rent the movie The Fury. Brian De Palma's movie from 1978, starring Kirk Douglas. Andrew Stevens, Amy Irving is in it, Kerry Snodgrass. It was shot in the city, lots of great locations. Water Tower Place downtown. They use the L really well. But they shoot an entire scene in Old Chicago. And it's hilarious. It's a hilarious scene. Because Andrew Stevens plays a guy who's telekinetic. He has powers. And at the beginning of the movie, he's Kirk Douglas' son in the movie. At the beginning of the movie, he thinks Kirk Douglas has been killed by Arabs on a beach. Because Kirk Douglas was like a, if I remember, was he a secret agent or something? And so these Arabs show up on these boats, and they get into a machine gun fight, and they kidnap Andrew Stevens, and he thinks that Kirk Douglas is dead. So he's at Old Chicago. He's walking around at Old Chicago. I can't remember why they went to Old Chicago, but they're walking. He's walking around Old Chicago, and he sees some Arabs on the swinging parachute ride. And so Andrew Stevens had this capability. In The Fury, I don't know if he did it in any other movies, but he had this one vein on his forehead, like between his eyes, that he could pulsate. Like he could actually make it pulsate. And so whenever he was going to use his telekinetic powers to make somebody fly across the room or whatever, or make someone's nose bleed or something, his vein would boom, 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 and they would. John Barry wrote the score for the movie, by the way, and it's a great score. And so he's in Old Chicago, and he sees these guys who are dressed, you know, they're Arabs, and it reminds him of the fact that his dad was killed. So he telekinetically unscrews the bolts that are holding the metal parachutes to the ride as it's circling, you know, going up and down. He unscrews the bolts. The parachute thing goes flying. It unhooks from the ride as the ride's spinning around. And these two guys, dressed as Arabs, are in like a metal parachute flying across Old Chicago and smashing into the haunted house.
Based on what you've told me about Old Chicago, probably didn't need telekinesis to do that.
Yeah,
huh?
No, I would imagine some of the bolts just flew out by themselves. I remember when I saw The Fury, because Old Chicago was still open at that time. The Fury came out in 78, so it was still open. It was still a place that I went to pretty regularly. I was 13 at that time. And I remember going nuts. I remember like, oh my God, that's old Chicago. And that's the haunted house. You know, ignoring the fact that the scene is completely ridiculous. And years have passed, and every once in a while I'll pop in the Fury, and I love that scene in old Chicago. I love it.
You miss malls?
I hate malls.
Oh, yeah, you hate malls.
Yeah.
I kind of miss them, even though they make me a little uncomfortable. Like, I kind of like the idea of a one place
well,
you could go.
The only one that I went to on a regular... There were two that I went to on a regular basis. There was the Brickyard, because we lived at, like, Grand in Austin, and the Brickyard was right there. And, of course, the Hip. That's the one I went to all the time.
And the Hip is still here.
Yeah, the Hip is still there.
And it's still good, too.
Yeah. I would go to the Hip, and I would go to Aladdin's Castle. They had a video game, you know, game room in there called Aladdin's Castle. Yeah, and I would go. That would be the most consistent place I would go to, you know, because we'd be at the Hip. We'd walk around, see a movie at the Norwich, buy a record at Rolling Stone. That was, you know, that was a regular. That was like a regular day for my friends and I.
There's a Saturday right there.
Yeah,
filled.
Yeah. And then we go to Demetrio's at the corner of Montrose and Central and just sit there for 5 hours. Ooh. Not there anymore. It's a Walgreens.
Yeah.
Demetrio's was great. George was the owner of that place. He was very, very cool. Very cool. We spent hours in that place. It was one of those deals where if you were out and the other like guys that I hung out with, because obviously there were no phones or anything there, so you couldn't like call somebody up or text them and go, where are you at? Just go to Demetrio's. One of us would be there. Or all of us. It was seriously, it was like Diner. It was like the movie Diner. We were there like every night. Just hanging out. Then go across the street to Toots.
Beg pardon?
Toots. Toots, man. I don't think Toots is still there. Toots was, what you'd do is you'd eat a gyro at Demetrio's. And Demetrio's had booths and stuff so you could sit. Toots was a drive-in. So it didn't have, it had benches outside, but you'd go to Toots for ice cream. So you'd eat at Demetrio's and then you'd go across the street to Toots and you'd eat ice cream. And I don't know if Toots is...
Closed in 2006.
Oh.
But...
no Toots.
Listen. A little nice little article here says, Toots was not just a fixture of the Northwest Side.
Yeah.
It was a grand Chicago holdout like Hot Dogs or Video Adventure or The Hideout.
Yep.
It was Americana. Its existence fixed in time somewhere between the mom-and-pop drive-thru and the hipster franchise.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that.
What a loving tribute to Toots.
Toots, man. Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. It was the best. The logo was awesome. Is there a picture of the logo? The Toot, Mr. Toot? Is there a picture of the Toots logo? Because he's hilarious.
He's this kind of oddly shaped head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's Mr. Toot.
That's
right between,
Toot.
Right between a Chicago dog.
That's Toot.
Mr. Toot.
That's right. Yeah. Spent so much time at Demetrio and Toots. Okay. We've got some texts coming in about old Chicago. We're going to go through and talk about some theme parks that are insane, that were shut down. Some are still operating. But theme parks in general are a little weird. I mean, if you just think about it, they're weird. So if you've ever been to some theme parks, you know, around the country or the world, and you want to tell us about them, some of the craziest ones are the rides. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio continues on 720 WGN. Great song. Nick DiGilio continues here on 720 WGN here till 4 a.m. Coming up after 2 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Neil McQueenie, who's the owner of Midway Dispensary, and we're going to talk about just the unbelievable success that the dispensaries had just in the month of January alone after the selling of cannabis became legal, $40 million worth in Illinois. Insane. 312-981-7200, Wildcard Wednesday is the theme. You pick the music that we hear every morning coming back from breaks and from the news. The theme this morning is Wildcard Wednesday, so that means any artist, any time, any song, anything. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Ben.
Great song. All right. So Old Chicago was a sort of a legendary 70s place. It was an indoor amusement park slash mall. It was innovative for the time, located in Bolingbrook. And it did not was not a big success. And one of the reasons why is because the stores that surrounded the amusement park, the mall, they were terrible. They had no anchor stores. They had like really terrible, and they couldn't pay the rent. And you know, attendance really dropped after the initial like year or two. I've been there several times, and so basically that building is being bought for $50 million by Amazon. Which I just find, that number is staggering to me.
We're going to get Amazon packages so fast.
$50 million for the Old Chicago building in Bolingbrook. I don't know. You know, if you've not been to Old Chicago, you probably don't find it as amusing as I do, having someone, you know, being someone who's gone to Old Chicago many, many, many times. $50 million. So we're going to start talking about crazy theme parks. And stuff like that. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going, hey. You, man?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to talk about two bizarre rides from Great America. The first one I remember, it was called Iron Wolf. It was the one they locked you in. You had to stand on your feet.
Yep. Standing roller coaster's bad idea. Because I rode the Iron Wolf one time. I rode it one time. And my head bounced off of those things, off of the gear that you're supposed to put over your head, that thing you pull down over your head, the harness.
Yeah.
The harness that you pull down over your head. My head bounced back and forth through the whole ride. I walked off. I had a migraine. It was,
oh my God.
It was awful. Awful.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But this one, I think this one is worse. Of course, the Superman ride.
Yeah, I never rode it.
I rode it once.
Yeah, never rode it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Ike.
No problem.
All right. You like the Superman ride?
When that debuted, it must have been 2003, I want to say.
Yeah.
That was the biggest deal. It was the talk of West Elementary School in Crystal Lake.
Oh, I remember it was a big deal.
Huge deal. And we used to have a reading program where if you read a certain number of hours in a school year, by the time summer came around, you'd get a free ticket to Great America.
Yeah.
And I was a voracious reader anyway, so I had that done in about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. So it was a big deal. You had to get your ticket to Great America that summer. You had to read enough so that you could go and ride Superman Ultimate Flight.
Mm-hmm.
And I rode that coaster probably 7 times in a row in a single day. I loved it.
Yeah, see, I've not been there since 20 years. It's been 20 years since I've been to Great America. So that ride obviously didn't exist when I went there. But that Iron Wolf ride was a nightmare. That thing was unbelievable.
I wonder. I got to see if it's still there.
No. It's gone.
Because I got to ride it. I remember getting to ride it.
First of all, here's the other issue with the Iron Wolf. Not only did your head bounce off of that harness, that big hard plastic harness, like seriously, like a ping pong ball, back and forth, but they had this little protrusion, little teeny seat that basically just fit between your crotch. And so now you've got this thing that's like pushing on your crotch as you're trying to stand. And I'm not the tallest guy in the world. And I think this thing was made for taller guys. So my feet were barely touching the floor of the coaster. So you walk off, you know, you can't have children and your brains are scrambled. That's essentially what happens when you went on Iron Wolf. The best ride, the best coaster at Great American, I haven't been there in a long time, but Raging Bull is the best coaster at that place.
Well, they've really updated it quite a bit. You put it on a headset now. It's like there's some VR sections.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it's insane now. I know.
That debuted, I want to say, 1999?
Something like that.
Somewhere.
It's a
was
great
really
ride.
Amazing roller coaster.
Yeah.
I was so upset that I couldn't ride. I was too young. I was too short.
Yeah.
First time I got to ride it, it was like a religious experience.
I will say this, though, classic, the Eagle, one of the greatest wooden roller coasters that you could possibly find. I remember when that opened. That opened in 76, and it was, you know, and it was also really cool because it was a racing. You had two coasters going down at once.
And didn't one of them go backwards?
Yeah, well, they would do that. They would do that with all the rides.
Yeah.
They would have a night where everything went backwards.
Yeah.
Or a day where the rides would be backwards. Yeah, and they did. The first one that they did that with was the American was the Eagle.
Then they had Viper, which is a nice wooden one.
Viper is a good ride, yeah.
Not good if you're tall, though, because I would I would maybe clear some of those beams by literally inches.
I can't do the... here's what I... I don't know if I... haven't been on a roller coaster in a very long time, but I used to love them. But the I really freaked out. I do not like roller coasters where you're suspended and the track is above your head. I can't
like
deal.
Like Batman.
Can't deal.
You don't like Batman.
Can't deal. Because I need to have something below me. You know what I mean? I need to have... I need to know that there's something suspended below me. I can't have the dangling legs. I can't like have just air below me. Freak out. Texts are flying in. 630 says, I'm sure we probably crossed paths at Old Chicago. My friends and myself hung out there back in the day. I remember asking a ride operator about the terrible smell. He said a lot of it was the grease from the coaster tracks and wheels. Yeah, mixing with cotton candy and popcorn and meat. 847, I remember going to the haunted house ride in Old Chicago, and my sisters and I got really, really scared. It was a fun ride. It was a good haunted house. 630 said, I had my picture taken wearing Western gear, made to look like it was taken during the Wild Wild West. Also had a glamour shot done there. Best part of Old Chicago was that you could park close to the door. Yeah, because nobody went. One of my favorite moments in National Lampoon's Vacation, and I wish Wally World were real, but is when they show up at Wally World and he parks 9 miles away from the entrance and says, first one here, first one's to leave, because they're going to be someone. Then they do the Chariots of Fire thing. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're remembering Old Chicago. It's been bought by Amazon for $50 million, if you can believe that, in 2020. 847, Kitty Land. Oh, yes, Kitty Land. Went to Kitty Land many, many times. Had a birthday party at Kitty Land. I can't remember which one it was, probably 8 or 9. I was probably 8 or 9. And I had all my friends come over to my house, and you could, you know, get a party. You could book a birthday party at Kitty Land, and they come and pick you up in a fire truck. And you get to ride in the back of a fire truck to Kitty Land. And we did that. And I was the hit that year. Like, my birthday party was like, wow, we're on a fire truck. It's a bunch of 8 and 9 year old boys taking a fire truck with the sirens blowing all the way to North Avenue, where Kitty Land was. Legendary place, Kitty Land. Legendary. My wife grew up going every week. It closed when our daughter was 2. I've heard few stories about why it closed. I'm not sure we got the truth. Got anything? No, I'm not sure. I think it was just a financial thing. 630 says, didn't they film the Blues Brothers there at Old Chicago? No. Not at Old Chicago. I'm trying to... Somebody will know. What's the mall they destroy? Where was that mall? Because it was about to close. That mall was about to close. And so they let them just drive through and tear the place up because it was going to close anyway.
And for all you Kitty Land fans out there, you can ride the Little Dipper. They moved it over to Six Flags.
Oh, the Little Dipper's at Six Flags.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or at least if it's the original or a recreation, but the Little Dipper from Kitty Land is at Six Flags Great America.
And I know somebody's got the sign, because the Kitty Land sign is legendary.
Yeah, it was restored by the Melrose Park Historical Society.
Because it was in Melrose Park. It was located in Melrose Park on North Avenue.
Yeah, so they fixed it all up, and they held a restoration ceremony in the library parking lot back in 2012.
Iconic. It's an iconic sign. Iconic local sign. When you think of Chicago, local Chicago signs, Kitty Land is right near the top of what's most iconic. 630 says, man, I miss it so much. I really thought it was cool. It was like a step back in time. Thanks, Nick's XOXO. Oh, Gossip Girl wrote in.
Isn't Gossip Girl a guy?
It was like Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell wrote in. All right. Let's do this. Let's continue talking about this. We're having some fun reminiscing here about Old Chicago and some rides. We're having so much fun talking about Old Chicago, we might have to hold the ride portion, like the crazy rides, theme park rides, and crazy theme parks, after we talk to our guest, who's coming up in a little bit after the 2 o'clock news. Neil McQueenie is going to be here from the Midway Dispensary. And if you got more old Chicago memories or anything like that, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200 right here on 720 WGN. The Nick DeGiglio Show continues.
Back when my hair was short, I was a wild soft sport. Only beer parties still free. College appealed to me. Eastern philosophy beat in my mind. LSD.
God, I haven't heard this song in years. Man, oh man. Nick DeGiglio Show continues here on 720 WGN. Every morning slash night morning, we let you program the songs that we hear coming back from break and coming back from the news. We have a different theme every morning. Today is Wednesday, so it's Wildcard Wednesday, which means basically any song, any artist, anything. And who requested that?
It's coming to us from Jay.
God, it's been years since I've heard that song. Who is that again?
Gun Hill Road.
Right.
Back when my hair was short.
Yep.
It's about a man's transformation into a hippie.
Yep.
Those dang hippies.
Yep. Nick DeGiglio here. We were talking about old Chicago and the fact that it's being sold to Amazon. The building is being sold to Amazon for $50 million. $50 million, and I crack up every time. By the way, a caller called in and let us know that the mall that gets destroyed in the Blues Brothers, where they drive through and destroy basically everything, was the Dixie Square Mall in Harvey. So the community of Harvey said, "Yeah, go ahead, just destroy the whole thing." You know, that movie is all destruction, like the Blues Brothers. It's just nothing but destruction. The whole movie, cars flying.
Destruction in Seoul.
Police cars stacking up in middle of the intersections. Malls getting destroyed. So, Old Chicago. 708 says, went for my 16th birthday with friends. I don't remember any of the stores. I guess that's why it didn't work. We went because it was an indoor amusement park and not to go shopping. Yeah, I mean, the idea... seriously, was like, drop the kids off. Let the kids ride the little roller coasters and go to the little haunted house. Eat a little cotton candy, and you can buy a bunch of crap from some really terrible stores that aren't going to be open next month. And it did have a weird smell. I guess, you know, as the one of the listeners who sent the text in said that it was one of the operators, ride operators, said it was because of the grease from the roller coasters and the rides. Yeah, but it's also because of the, like, there was weird food. There was, like, weird. I mean, it was just, it had a weird, it's a weird smell. It was so 70s. It only lived in that era. I mean, it was only around for 5 years. 75 to 1980 is a very specific time, you know? It's a specific time in pop culture, in fashion, in what we ate. What music we listen to. Um, 708 says, the old Chicago building was demoted years ago. The lot got turned into an automobile dealer and auction lot. So an automobile dealer slash auction lot is going for $50 million? Why am I so astounded by this amount of money? I don't... I mean, it's not like Amazon doesn't have $50 million. That's like, you know, if they lost $50 million, it'd be like me dropping a 10 on the way to the store. But still, 219 said, I grew up in Northwest Indiana. We spent a lot of time at Souser's Kittyland in Sherrillville. The big roller coaster was the Mad Mouse. All of the local school, church, and company picnics were held there, and it was a lot of fun. It closed probably around the same time as Old Chicago. That is the best part from the past.
Yeah.
The Mad Mouse. You know, my parents, you know, we're waxing philosophically about, you know, places like Old Chicago and Kittyland. But of my parents' generation, it was all about Riverview. Tom, you've heard about Riverview, right?
Yeah, I've heard it. Yeah.
You know where it was?
Oh, my God, where was it? Where was that?
Right next to Lane Tech.
Yeah.
There's a Jewel there now, a Mariano's, and DeVry. That's where Riverview was. If you can imagine that. like Belmont and Western. That's where a giant amusement park was.
That's so odd.
And I've heard so many stories. My mom went on the. This may explain some things about, you know, my personality, my behavior, and how much of an idiot I am. My mom rode the big parachute ride while she was pregnant with me.
Rattled you around a little.
Closed in 68, I think. Can you look that up? Riverview Amusement Park. But the stories of Riverview are legendary, especially for people around my parents' age. My parents are in their 70s, and it was all about Riverview. If you lived in the city, Riverview was the place.
Operated from 1904 to 1967.
67.
Located at 3727 Northwestern Avenue.
If you can, 3700 Northwestern, a giant amusement park.
Wild.
Hey, I haven't been near that intersection in a while. Is the bridge completely gone?
Oh, man. I don't really get down that way myself.
Because they were working on it. And this was that, you know, the bridge that went over right there at Belmont. It was basically right at Belmont and Western. And I know that they were working. I think it's gone. I think that's gone. But, yeah, when I used to drive, and, you know, when we would go to movies, we went to City North a lot. Like my ex-girlfriends and I, we would go to City North a lot. And so you take Western down. And we used to, of course, go over that. And the bridge was legendary. I grew up at Addison and Lincoln. So Addison and Western was in walking distance of my house. Speaking of Addison and Western, did you ever get to go to the sub place at the corner of Addison and Western Heroes? Oh, man. It's a damn shame that that place is closed. The best subs ever. And it was just, it's not a chain. You know, it was a mom and pop. It was there forever. And they were the best subs of all time at Heroes, at Addison and Western, right across from Lane.
219 says, yes, the whole bridge is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird.
It's got to be weird, especially if you, you know, like kind of grew up in that area and drove that strip for a long time. But yeah, Heroes just closed a couple of years ago. And there was an outcry because people loved that place. And it was very distinctive. You know, if you got a sub from Heroes and you brought it someplace, like I got a sub from Heroes on my way to drink at Ricochet's one day, a couple of days actually, but I was in the area on Western. And so I got a sub and I brought it to Ricochet's and I opened it up at the bar, and two people who were like sitting 4 days away just went, that's from Heroes. That's a sub from Heroes, because you could smell it, man. No other sub sandwich smelled like Heroes or tasted like Heroes. That's a shame that place is gone. I used to eat there all the time. That was the only place we went for subs. You know, when you live at Addison and Lincoln, too, it's pretty easy. Well, where do you want to get a sub? Well, we're going to go to Addison Western. We're going to go to Heroes and get the best sub in the city. Yeah. It's just how anytime you would go past that intersection, though, or because we used to shop at that Jewel. And, you know, and I would always try and imagine this insanely huge amusement park right there. Always weird, man. 815 says the rotor, human centrifuge, and the parachute ride at Riverview were also the best. Also the Wild Mouse coaster. My parents would tell me about that coaster all the time. But yeah, my mom's... Now, the parachute ride, these were actually... Tom, you're sitting on a board. It's not the parachute ride that's in The Fury, which is that, you know... You're actually in a parachute. You're in a parachute. You're sitting on a board like a swing is the way it was described to me. I think you had a belt on. Put a belt on you. You go up, you know, like 100 feet in the air, and then they drop you. It's attached by a string. It's attached by ropes and stuff, but the parachute opens up, and it's actual parachute ride. Like, it's not called a parachute ride because the metal component looks like a parachute. It's a parachute. And my parents would tell me that you would sit like you were on a board. You'd go like 100 feet in the air and just get dropped. And that's the ride my mom took with me in her.
Wow.
And I think she was like 6 months pregnant or 7 months pregnant when she died.
You're quite along there.
Yeah. But the rotor. What's the rotor the one where you're where you stand up against the wall and it spins and spins and spins and spins and then the floor drops? Is that the rotor? And then you're stuck to the wall?
Or is that the centrifuge?
Well, yeah, no, I think the rotor, it was called the rotor.
Okay.
Okay, so I was on the rotor one time. I don't know if maybe it was at Old Chicago. This might have been at Old Chicago. It sounds like an Old Chicago story. So the rotor, for those who don't know, you're basically in a tube, a big tube, and you're standing up against the wall. All right? And the floor spins, the wheel spins. The wall spins so fast, so fast, so fast that you get stuck to the wall. And then they drop the floor, so you're suspended to the wall with no floor. And then they slow it down, and you start to slip and slide down the wall a little more as they bring the floor up. That was the rotor. I was on the rotor one time, and we're whipping around. We're all getting stuck to the wall. It's going faster and faster and faster. This guy vomits. It flies back and hits the wall and is stuck to the wall. The rotor. 630 said, a store I remember from Old Chicago, make your own painting. You squirted paint, your choice, several colors, on plain white paper. Then their machine spun it around with centrifugal force and made a tie-dye design. See, those kind of stores aren't going to work. And then 815 says, we loved Adventureland. Adventureland was fun. It's also a great movie. So, all right. We are going to talk about these crazy theme parks from around the world and some crazy rides. We'll do that a little bit later on. But we're very excited to talk with Neil McQueeney, who's the owner of Midway Dispensary. And he's going to join us after the news, which continues, the Nick DiGilio show continues with the news after this. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio. We're here until 4 a.m. on this Wednesday morning. We've got a Know Your Onion coming up. Neil McQueeney is the owner of Midway Dispensary on South Archer Avenue in Chicago. As you all know, on January 1st, recreational cannabis became legal, the sale of legal cannabis. And to say it was popular is an understatement. Neil McQueeney is the owner of Midway Dispenser. Neil, did you think that it was going to go as well as it did?
I was cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Well,
we put a ton of time into it, like everybody else, and it was the everybody out there was it was amazing time to be out there on January 1st, and it all going so well, it was great.
The numbers are just nuts. I mean, for the month of January, over $39 million was spent on legal cannabis.
That's pretty staggering.
Yeah, it really is. Tell me
especially
about
considering all the shortages that we had, and the people we had to turn away because we couldn't stay open 24 hours.
How did you get started in the business? And tell me a little bit about Midway Dispensary.
Sure. Hey, thanks. I was I'm a trial attorney by trade, and after 2008, a lot of the clients went belly up, so we were looking for new ways to generate revenue, and I started in the gaming industry, video gaming terminals, when that went legal under Governor Quinn. He passed the Medical Cannabis Program Act, and it was pretty simple to go from one highly regulated industry to another. I was going to get a bunch of clients and ended up just going for a license myself with a great team of partners, including my brother. And we ended up getting one of the licenses, which was pretty exciting. And then we had to figure out what to do with it.
How long has Midway Dispensary been around?
We opened our doors on April 26, 2016.
And
just in time to miss the 420. Holiday.
Well, you know what's funny is that this entire April is going to be a 420.
Oh, this entire year is going to be a 420.
Well, yeah. yes, I would think so. So have they slowed down at all, and how are you guys coping with the demand?
The demand's been incredible. We're limited by the amount of product that they've produced. We're not a vertically integrated dispensary, so we're an independent mom and shop store, so we have to get all of our product from licensed Illinois cultivators, and they haven't built out all of their facilities, so they're not at 100%. So So there's, you know, there's a flour shortage, and there's some other products that we can't quite get that we're used to getting when there was just a medical program with 55 dispensaries in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been, you know, we ramped up our staffing, we extended our hours, we've educated the purchasers, we've educated our patients, we told them all to stock up in December to get as much as they can so that they could withstand the shortage. And so far, it's been pretty good. We only sell adult use on weekends from Friday to Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And the rest of the time is for our medical patients.
Oh, I see. Okay. We're talking with Neil McQueenie, who is the owner of Midway Dispensary on Archer in Chicago, about medical marijuana and legal recreational marijuana and how incredible the business has been. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So what about that first week? How crazy was it? Were you nervous?
I was terrified. We did a ton of work to get ready for it, working with the state regulators, working with the city of Chicago, working with the Chicago Police Department, who, by the way, was and is just amazing, helping us and making sure that you know, nobody's getting any silly ideas and watching the lines and everything like that. But all the work we went into it, we had to reapply for our adult use license. So we had to submit all of our application again into the state to get that adult use license. And then I was working with the cultivators to make sure that we had enough product for the adult use purchasers when they came in. I mean, we're by the airport, so we expected a large contingent of out-of-towners to come in and check us out. So we're preparing for that for, you know, 2 months and still prioritizing our medical patients the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a dance you got to do. But for us, that's what we're there for. We're there for the patients. Everything else with the purchasers, the adult use, it's gravy. And we, you know, we treat them all the same. It's all about service and customer care and education and explaining to them the product. You know, it's not like going into a bar and ordering any one of the beers. You know, there's specific strains and cannabis profiles that people are curious about and want to know about. And, you know, what I tell people is it's all medicine, regardless of the tax rate they're charging you. You know, everybody has an endocannabinoid system. The medicine affects you, and how does it affect you? And we want you to know how it affects you before you use it.
Mm. Now, how many medical patients do you service usually?
Well, we started off with 6 patients, and we're at about 1,300, 1,400 today.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah, it was a little scary in the beginning.
Yeah. I bet. So is there a preferred method upon which to consume cannabis? Because there are a lot of different ways that people do it. What's the most popular at the dispensary?
I guess flower would be, you know, just smoking a rolling a joint or smoking a bong seems to be everybody has seen it at least, if not tried it themselves. So flower is still number one in the state of Illinois. I used to like it a lot, but I'm more of an edibles guy.
Okay.
Now. So, and I see a lot of transitioning from that flower to the edibles. You know, a lot of doctors, a lot of people don't like to have you smoke your medicine.
Sure.
So there's a ton of other ingestion forms. The science is finally caught up to the medicine, and it comes in all varieties. Mm. You know, everything you see at a Walgreens, you can see at the store with the ingestion methods.
Oh, it's really pretty crazy. Neil McQueenie is the owner of Midway Dispensary. Did you, you know, as you know, someone I'm in my 50s, so and I suspected at some point.
You don't sound a day over 40.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I remember, you know, wondering if they would ever legalize pot. It had been a talk for a long time. And back in the 70s, you know, you were buying pot from some dude on the corner and getting yourself a nickel bag, as they used to call it, and all that stuff. Did you ever think you'd see the day when it would not only be, you know, legal, but also would be so incredibly popular?
Oh, God, no. It was 95 when legal in California with the medical program.
Yeah.
And still, I never thought it would be, I'd never lived to see Illinois go legal medically, let alone recreationally. It's been fast and furious, and Illinois has done, you know, say what you want about the government, but they have done a fantastic job with this program, with this rollout.
Mm-hmm.
From the medical patients to the recent adult use rollout. It's just been every state has hiccups when they do this, and Illinois really did a great job of minimizing the hiccups, and we're still working with them every day to make sure we write those as
well.
This is something, you know, exciting and unexpected, and it's It's historic. It's wonderful to be a part of.
Yeah. I really never thought I'd see the day. I really did. Neil McQueenie is the owner of Midway Dispensary. We continue our conversation here on 720 WGN on a Wednesday morning as we continue. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday will continue, and we've got a Know Your Onion, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Neil McQueenie is the owner of Midway Dispensary on Archer Avenue in Chicago, and we are talking about the rollout, the incredibly successful rollout of recreational cannabis when it became legal on January 1st, and it just went over like gangbusters. Neil, dealing with the state has been a great thing then on this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been working with our regulators to make sure that the rollout was successful. It has been a great thing. I don't know if I'm not going to say it's been great the whole time since the beginning. Just working with the state to make sure that everything is, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, to make sure that the patients and now the purchasers are able to get their medicine it's been a good experience.
Now, the whole dealing with the shortages, how have you at Midway been dealing with it and other dispensaries? I know that a lot of dispensaries, many dispensaries ran out. I mean, the product was just sold out.
And we sold out. We were purchasing more and more. I think it was after December 1st we could start purchasing product for adult use. So we just bought as much as we could possibly fit in our vault and getting ready for January 1st. And I think we were one of the last ones to run out. I think we lasted till January 4th before we actually ran out. But yeah, people we ran out of flower, I think, day two.
Oh, man.
Excuse me. And it's very similar around the state. I mean, we all talk to each other, make sure, what's going on, seeing if there's any variances or variables going on in other areas of the state. But it was all pretty consistent that huge lines, huge demand, and people ran out of flower very quickly.
Did you see that the Girl Scouts were setting up tables with selling cookies at the dispensaries?
It's great. My daughters, we always gave out Girl Scout cookies because my kids were in Davies and Girl Scouts a couple years ago, and we got a few troops coming over this weekend, so we're excited for that too.
I just think that's very smart business on their parts. Sitting out.
We're training the next generation of fantastic businesswomen for the state of Illinois.
It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking with Neil McQueenie, owner of Midway Dispensary on South Archer in Chicago. What are your hours?
We are currently open Monday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
But only on the weekends you sell. It's all medical, as you said, Monday through Friday, correct?
Yeah, we're medical 7 days a week. We only sell adult use currently with the current limitations on product availability from Friday to Sunday. Same hours. And medical patients, if there's a line, they hop the line, come right to the front, get first access.
Okay. Now, what about for people who don't usually partake or have not partaken in the use of marijuana? What are sort of general benefits and what to expect by the full legalization?
For individuals or?
Well, start with individuals, yeah.
Sure. And we had a bunch of those people who were in line on January 1st trying to see what all the fuss was about.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, they just wanted a joint, one single product, a joint or a chocolate, something to just experiment, kind of bucket list type deal. And, those are the persons that are the purchasers that we really want to talk to and say, it's a great idea, but make sure that you understand what you're getting into, Don't just go for the highest THC potent thing. There's real medical benefits to it, which you can use, with a little bit or a lot. So for some people who didn't want to come in and get the patient card, they wanted to wait for it to get adult use, but they still had, these conditions that they wanted help with. So anything with some CBD in there, cannabidiol, that everyone's been talking about that you can get all over the place.
Yeah.
In addition to, some of the THC, like a 1-to-1 ratio or 2-to-1 ratio type product, is great for what they're looking for, either pain relief or anti-anxiety or, anti-nausea, depending on what their condition is. So you know, we've been spending a lot of time learning about that medicine and sharing the information, educating our patients with it. And it's the same thing with educating purchasers. You know, for whatever reason, they don't want to get a card or they just don't use it that much where it's, you know, they want to get a lot of product or visit the store that often. So they came in for, you know, once a month for one type of product that works for their condition. Or sometimes, you know, they just need to get a stiff drink cocktail like product and, you know, just have a good time on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Which is what we're getting into a bit more now.
Yeah, well, clearly there were lines around the block right, for that specific reason. What are some of the conditions that can be treated with THC and CBD?
Well, the state has approved I think it's 43 conditions, and you know, cancer is probably the most prevalent one. Currently, as a cancer patient, what works for me is high CBD for anti-pain and anti-nausea and recovery after a treatment of chemo.
Yeah.
Chemotherapy. And that THC, it's kind of, if you just use the CBD alone, it's a great product, but it's kind of like fighting with one hand tied behind your back without that THC. That THC and that CBD really work together in your endocannabinoid system to give you full body relief and help heal a lot of the damage that's been done with other treatments like the chemo or opioids. Last year, they passed the opioid bill where you can get, if you have opioids, you can elect to take that prescription and get medical cannabis to use for pain control. So you're not using that addictive product.
Mm.
So it's been, and that's been very successful as well for the patients that we've had.
We're talking with Neil McQueenie, who's the owner of the Midway Dispensary at 5648 South Archer in Chicago, about the incredible success of starting on January 1st the legalization of recreational marijuana. You know, let's talk a little bit about the quality of marijuana nowadays as opposed to back in the 60s and 70s. I mean, you remember the days when there was actually seeds in marijuana?
Well, you need the seeds.
Yeah.
You just don't want to pay for it.
Right. Right. So what's the difference? Like, is the product more potent now than it was back in those days?
See, people say that, and I'm not sure what they're exactly talking about. There's a lot of different changes in the extractions. So there's more potent medicine out there because they've taken the THC extracted from the flower into these concentrates. So there's the waxes and the shatters, which are far higher THC than just rolling up a joint.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, you can breed higher potency THC, but I would say it's not that dissimilar from what people were experiencing earlier. It's just more prevalent, and it depends on the product that you're using. So if you're going to go, if you use the joint in the 70s, you use the joint now, you're going to get the similar effects.
Yeah.
But if you're going to, you know, go from smoking a joint in the 70s to taking a gram, you know, doing a dab on a dab rig, it's going to be a lot more potent. You're going to have a different experience, and you're going to think it's a lot more potent than it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just depends on that. So what are the restrictions of use on marijuana? There are still restrictions despite the fact that it's legal, correct?
Yeah. Thank God. There are still restrictions.
Yeah.
You got to be 21 and over for adult use, or if you have a medical card, you have to be registered with the state of Illinois as a medical patient for the program.
Mm-hmm.
So no public use. You can't use it anywhere in public. You got to use it in private property. You know, you can't drive around with it. They still have somewhere operating under the influence laws that you got to be aware of. The allotments are different. So if you have a medical card, you can get up to 2.5 ounces of medical cannabis every 14 days. And for Illinois residents over 21 in the recreational market, it's 30 grams of flower, 5 grams of concentrates, and I think it's 500 milligrams of cart juice.
Mm-hmm.
And out-of-state residents, it's half that. So there's still a lot of restrictions, restrictions on availability, allotment, and where you can and who can use it.
All right. Neil McQueenie is the owner of Midway Dispensary, and we're talking here on the Nick DiGilio Show about now the legalization of recreational marijuana and the incredible success throughout the month of January. And if you didn't hear, Illinois dispensaries sold nearly $40 million worth of cannabis in 1 month. So to say that this is a success is an understatement. Neil McQueenie will continue the conversation here on 720 WGN. And the Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio on a Wednesday morning. 312-981-7200. Neil McQueenie is the owner of Midway Dispensary on South Archer Avenue in Chicago. And with the incredible success in the month of January with nearly $40 million of cannabis sold in Illinois, we've been talking about the issue here. And Neil, you mentioned that you yourself are a cancer patient, correct?
Correct.
And when did you decide that you were going to go the route of cannabis?
When I got diagnosed, it was about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been, you know, just working at the store. I was the day-to-day guy. I got the diagnosis, and I'd been working with all these patients of mine who were using the medicine and saw the effect it had on them and the help it was giving them, and it was a no-brainer for me. It, all my patients that were using it, we're getting some benefit, whether it was getting the clearance for their treatments, chemo or radiation, or just feeling better after their treatments and helping. We have a number of patients that have given incredible testimonials about how the medicine has allowed them or their loved one to have higher functionality and better day-to-day living mm-hmm. while they're treated with their disease. Mm-hmm. So it's, and I've experienced the same thing. I'm a In the beginning, I was a lawyer working at a cannabis dispensary, and now I'm an absolute true believer in the product and the medicine.
Wow, that's great. I know that you're 100% behind it, obviously, but is there still a stigma attached to marijuana, even if you're using it for medical reasons?
There is. The same stigmas that have always applied, the reefer madness, the you know, hippies, the... it makes you stupid, things like that, and they're just misinformed and outdated.
Yeah,
it's the smartest people I know, the most successful people I know, use cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak for the radio personalities, but the people I work with, the people I know, it enhances their lives.
Yeah. And I'm glad that it does. I'm glad that it's working for you. That's a really wonderful thing. It really is. And for all these other patients who have to deal with this illness, it's a really wonderful thing.
It's great to have. It's been too long in coming, but it's here now, and people are really taking advantage of it. And the medical professionals I talk to and I work with, you know, they see it as well.
Yeah. It's Neil McQueenie is here, owner of Midway Dispensary on South Archer in Chicago. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, 312-981-7200. And, you know, I always thought, you know, before, it, you know, recreational marijuana became legal, I always thought that it was kind of unfair that people could go out and get loaded and, you know, buy liquor at a Walgreens and, you know, and get smashed, but you couldn't get marijuana. And that was frowned upon, but drinking was, you know, kind of glorified.
Right. You're 100% right. And it's the same thing with, you know, the opioid prescriptions. It's, you know, you can take as many as you want as long as you're not working, and then good luck on the next day.
Yeah.
There's a little hypocrisy in all that, and it's, you know, she who wins history gets to write it, things like that. So there's a lot of, you know, political history, history about the product itself. And, you know, we're getting out of those shadows, and we're all, you know, it's a huge business. It's a huge industry. And people are seeing that now, and they're seeing the benefits of it. And it's, you know, we're working together to make sure that we continue to progress towards it being treated better than the other products you talked about.
Yeah, yeah. There's a story here that's from CNN that scientists have discovered a weed compound that may be 30 times more powerful than THC, and they call it THCP. Any words on that?
That's the first I've heard of it.
Oh,
but I'm sure there's a ton of research being done on it.
Yeah. The story says that it may deliver 30 times the high of THC, or any high at all is unclear. Italian scientists also discovered a second previously unknown compound they named CBDP, and appears it to be a cousin of CBD. So there's still lots of scientific reports going on out there.
Yeah, there's when this is what we're dealing with politically. I mean, research can be done all over the world, but the United States, with the best research scientists in the world, are limited by the laws we have with the federal government and state government. So there's a ton of research that is ongoing, and we're going to learn a ton more about this plant and the cannabinoids that come with it, including more medical efficacies that the plant's going to give to patients around the world. Mm-hmm. It's happening. There is a lot more to learn about it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's a lot more to learn about it. And I know that because of what's happening, and you know, not just in Illinois, but all over the place where it's legal, obviously more research is going to be put into it because they want to keep the product as safe and as possible.
Absolutely. And the research should be done because we do want to keep this the safest product we can.
So there are some people out there. We've been playing some PSAs here on the station about high driving, about driving when you're high. And this is a concern, but people need to use, you know, you talked about the restrictions on the use of the marijuana. People have to use their brains, you know, again.
Right. Using your common sense and using your brains, always a good idea.
Yeah.
If you're talking about, you know, people using the product while they're about to go to work or use heavy machinery, I mean, it's common sense.
Yeah.
It will, THC will alter your mind. And it's not safe to operate a vehicle. It's not safe to operate heavy machinery. It's not. There are certain things that you don't want to do if your mind is being altered with a chemical.
Right, and that's so
you have,
that's,
and you have to prepare for that. You have to plan for it. You know, that's why you have. You know, you can use Uber. You can all these other alternatives, so you don't have to put yourself or anybody else in jeopardy.
Yeah, and or you could just stay home.
Or stay home and get high.
Just stay home and get high. Right.
Right.
Hey, does the airport like the fact that you're called Midway Dispensary?
I haven't heard. we're getting our new billboard up by the airport that is it's Midway Dispensary, more red eyes than anybody else.
That is great. That's
we haven't heard great. We haven't heard anything negative yet. So
that is so great. That is great. Who came up with that, Neil?
I wish it was me.
Yeah.
So it was one of my partners at the store.
God, that's funny. That is so funny.
Yeah, Craig Custer.
Yeah. That's funny. Well, now that the business has slowed down, what are we looking at for the future here? Do you see the demand continue to be like huge?
Absolutely. Illinois is the fifth largest state. The demand's only going to get stronger. It's going to get bigger and better in Illinois. There's going to be 130 new dispensaries this year. There's going to be craft grows. There's going to be expansion of the current licensed cultivation centers. In Chicago, there's going to be consumption lounges when they get the ordinance all straightened out. So you can go to like a hookah bar, depending on, you know, what the ordinance says, but you can go to a place to consume your medicine because not all people can consume it in their private residence. So they want to create a safe place for them to use the medicine. And then there's going to be infusing licenses. So it's going to be more, better, and bigger, and great opportunities for the state of Illinois and its citizens.
It's astonishing how big this was. You know, when I saw the footage on television, when I read the numbers, just on January 1st alone, how it kept going throughout the entire month. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing, and bigger than I ever thought it would be.
Me too.
I'll be
honest. Me too.
Yeah. Well, hey, how many people are with you at Midway? You mentioned your brother and some other people. How big is the staff?
Oh, we got about staff-wise about 15 total with the owners on site.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations on all the success, Neil, and congratulations on using marijuana to help you get through a tough time.
Thank you very much, Nick. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
There you go. All right, Neil McQueenie is the owner of Midway Dispensary. And they're at 5648 South Archer in Chicago. This has just been a phenomenon, and we wanted to get Neil's thoughts on it right here. All right, it's the Nick DeGiglio Show continuing on 720 WGN.
There is nothing that is wrong.
The Nick DeGiglio Show continues here on 720 WGN, and we're going to get back to the theme park talk and the crazy rides talk as well. We're having so much fun with that. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We do have a call here from a listener who wanted to comment on the topic that we were just talking about, the use of cannabis, both recreationally, but more importantly, medically. And Dave is here. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Okay, sir. What's
I really needed to, because I was never that much of a believer in using that for, you know, anything that had to do with it. But a couple of years back, my wife was diagnosed with head and neck cancer. It was severe enough that she had 13-hour surgery, removed her voice box and her throat, and had to sit there and take muscle and skin tissue off of her thigh to form the new throat. Then, of course, chemo and radiation both. They were prescribing her 30 milligrams of Oxycontin, the instant kind, three times a day. And in between that was time-release morphine. And with what they were giving her, she was sick all the time, losing weight down to 115 pounds around there, which was, it was incredibly sad to sit there and see her go through that. We sat there and actually had a family member that has a mother-in-law and had a dispensary. So we gave it a shot with the edibles. And I'll tell you what, not only did she get her appetite, but it did help control the pain, because she went down to only take some, the Oxycontin in the morning and didn't have to do it the rest of the day.
Wow.
And she, you know, better strength and stuff like that. But what really surprised me, she had seven different doctors through this whole ordeal. And not one of them would sit there and advocate anything that had to do with edibles or anything, no medical. They said, we can help control the pain this way, which it helped control, but she was sicker than a dog. Yeah. She was not eating. So I'll tell you what, I don't know about the recreational use, but as far as medically, I'm all for that. I can see that. We went through that, and boy, I tell you what, I'm a firm believer of that now, big time.
Yeah, yeah. How is your wife doing?
We are at 1 year cancer free.
Oh, great, man.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'll tell you what. That was a couple weeks ago. We had our 1 year checkup, and everything looks great. And now we're looking at maybe getting the stent put in, because she still can't talk. She don't have a voice box.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what. Even though she's going through that part right now, she's happier than anything more. I still have her, so thank God for
that. Yeah, I was just going to say, she's still with you, man. Oh, that's so great. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the call, and your best to your wife, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, Dave, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, it's a great story. Great story. 1 year cancer-free. God bless her. Ugh. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to get we were talking about old Chicago, the ridiculous concept that old Chicago was, even though it ruled. But I believe old Chicago was a concept that could only exist in the 70s. and it is a source of great memories for me, though, I have to say. As tacky and as weird as the place was, old Chicago, in case you don't remember, was an indoor amusement park slash mall in Bolingbrook. Only lasted about 5 years, and it was kind of ill-conceived and weird, but I loved the place when I was a kid, so we were talking about that. But that's going to get us into other crazy theme parks. We were talking a little bit about places like Adventureland and Kiddyland, and, of course, the classic Riverview, which is of my parents' generation. Which was located at Belmont and Western, which I still find astonishing. But there are many pretty crazy and weird theme parks around the world. TheTravel.com put together an article detailing some of these. And if you've traveled around, is Marcus up now? You think Marcus is up listening?
Oh, I bet. You know what? I hope he is.
If Marcus is up listening, because Marcus, you know, he travels around. He goes to a lot of theme parks. He rides a lot of crazy roller coasters. Marcus LeShock, by the way, is who we're talking about from the TV side of WGN, who's a great guy. I've been on the show many, many times. Good friend. He specializes in that kind of stuff. And I bet he'd have some stories or some rides that he has gone on. So Travel.com says, and by the way, if you've been on some insane rides and you want to describe them, and if you've been to some really crazy or weird theme parks from around the country or around the world, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. When you think about it, every theme park is a crazy idea. Who would think that for entertainment, human beings would want to be dropped from intense heights or flung forward at biologically impossible speeds? Who would think that tourists would want to visit a purely artificial destination where the cultures, structures, and characters are entirely fictional? Theme parks are fundamentally a ludicrous idea, but evidently they appeal to a large, diverse audience. Theme parks connect to childlike fantasies, desires for environmental escape, and for the human body to transcend its natural capacity for movement. When you're a kid, you are tinier than the adults around you and capable of true speed or dexterity. In a theme park, however, the child within us can move impossibly fast, fly, experience adrenaline-surging loops and dips. Theme parks are ridiculous, impossible, and endlessly alluring simply because they connect to our childhood fantasies of alternative realities. So here we go. This one's closed, but it was called Gulliver's Kingdom. Gulliver's Kingdom was creepy from the start, they say. Gulliver's Kingdom was based on Jonathan Swift's satire from 1726, Gulliver's Travels. In the novel, the protagonist washes ashore a mysterious island where he is held captive by a race of tiny people. As you glean through, visitors are meant to feel like that race of tiny people. The park opened in 1997, according to Web Urbanist, seemed doomed from the start to financial mismanagement. A nearby nerve gas facility. What? A nerve gas facility and general lack of planning, the park didn't have any real rides. Gulliver's Kingdom closed in 2001 and was demolished in 2007, so nothing remains in this patch of earth but bits of concrete. So basically, what do you walk in and everything is giant?
Yeah.
So you're made to feel like you're the little people. What were the name of the little people in that?
Oh, gosh.
Pudlians? They did have a name. Did you ever see the remake that Jack Black did?
Nah, I skipped that one.
They did have...
Lilliput.
Yeah.
So they're Lilliputlians.
Lilliputlians, yeah. Okay. Another crazy theme park. And we're talking about theme parks and crazy rides and stuff. And if you want to jump in, please, 312-981-7200. Pripyat Park. Pripyat Park. P-R-I-P-Y-A-T. Pripyat Park. Once had a bright future. The rides were completed. The I's were dotted. The T's were crossed. And everything was in place for a grand opening on May 1st, 1986. Then Chernobyl happened. And this place was in Ukraine. Chernobyl was a catastrophic nuclear accident, which occurred only 3 kilometers away in central Pripyat, Ukraine, on April 26, 1986. Pripyat Park has laid a sad, abandoned artifact of unrealized optimism ever since. Oh, man.
You ever seen some of that stuff?
Yeah.
It's freaky.
It is weird. All right, how about Berlin's Spree Park? This one's closed, too. Left to the elements. Spree Park is an abandoned amusement park that was once East Berlin. This isn't just an abandoned theme park. This is an abandoned communist theme park. It was originally opened in 1969 as a cheerful respite from day-to-day East German life under Stasi control. As you may have guessed, the park initially was wildly successful. Then the park steadily declined after the reunification of Germany in 1989 because, you know, suddenly the entire world opened up for the inhabitants of East Germany. Spree Park was officially closed in 2002, and it remains, and its remains can be seen by visitors today. So yet another abandoned amusement park, theme park.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole world. I find it funny that Old Chicago hits a cross-section of two very interesting things, desolate malls and desolate theme parks.
Yeah,
which are two things that you can go out and like find.
Yeah,
and they're very, very strange.
Yeah. How about when you know there was years ago in the late '80s, we were hanging out with some people who lived in Tinley Park, so we drove to Tinley, and we went to go see, you know, the Fulci movie Demons, obviously. Well, that's a Bava movie. You know the Bava movie Demons. the not Mario Bava, Lamberto Bava. So it's about. Have you seen Demons?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because it's a
because I know it's Dario Argento presents.
Yeah, Argento produced it, put his name on it. Yeah, but it, I mean, but the essentially the plot is that a whole bunch of people go to this midnight show of a horror movie, and there's the. They like somebody pricks their finger on a bad like on a prop from the movie in the lobby, and they turn into a demon, and then everybody turns into demons, and so it mimics what's on the screen. So it was only playing in one theater when it opened on the big screen back in the 80s, and of course I wanted to go, so I got few of my friends and we drove 33 miles to Tinley Park to see to see Demons. And I was dating a girl at the time who lived in Tinley Park, so we all met up and went. And I got to tell you, it was one of the weirdest experiences ever. You're talking about malls, abandoned malls. Okay, they had a mall. I don't know. I don't even know if it's there. If anybody from Tinley Park, you want to jump in here? It was called the Bremerton Mall. The Bremen, Bremen, the Bremerton Mall. And the theater inside that mall was called the Bremen. And that was the only place that Demons was playing. So we're going in to see a movie about, you know, and it's in a band, like a weird old movie theater. And we go in to the mall and it was desolate. Like it was on its last legs. This had to be like 86 maybe or 87. Around that time, 86 or 87. And I don't know if the Bremerton Mall has been rebuilt. I don't know if it's open. If anybody's on the south side and knows that, 312-981-7200, talk or text. But we walked in and it was creepy as hell. You know what I mean? It was. There were still a few parts open, but there was a lot of darkness. Like it was only like half lit. We went on like a Friday night at 9 or something. So some of the places were closed. Some were abandoned. Some were boarded up. And we walked around the mall a little bit and it was just really weird and creepy. And like, ugh. So then we go to the movie theater, which is still one of the only things that's open in that mall, or was open in that mall. I don't think it's open anymore. It was the Bremen Theater. We go in, and then we see that movie. So we're sitting in, like, an abandoned mall, half-lit, dark, creepy, weird. We're in a movie theater watching a movie about people watching a movie and turning into demons and killing each other. And after the movie, when we walked out, everybody was freaking out. Like, we couldn't get out of that mall fast enough. And I just, that was the only time I ever went to the Bremen Theater. It was the only time I ever went to the Bremerton Mall. And it was clearly on its very, very last legs at that time. But I don't know if anybody remembers the Bremerton Mall or if it's still there, if it was rebuilt. But that's the only experience I ever had at the Bremen Theater. And it was terrifying. Seeing that movie under those circumstances in what was essentially a dilapidated, like, one-third operating mall at, like, night on a Friday, seeing a crazy horror movie. So, but yeah, you were mentioning abandoned malls. That was one of the, and as I've mentioned before on this show, even earlier this morning, I mentioned I'm not a mall guy. I freak out in malls. And that was one of the creepiest things ever, and adding to it, making it doubly creepy, was the fact that we saw this movie about people watching a movie. So, here's Garrett on WGN. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
So I grew up in Tinley, and you're right. It was desolate for a little while, for towards the end of the 80s there. You had the Dollar Movies at Bremerton.
Yeah.
And right across, you had the arcade.
Yep.
And then that was it.
That was it.
And then there was a Baskin Robbins in there. My sister worked there when she was a teenager. She got Dennis DeYoung's autograph on a Baskin Robbins napkin.
Nice.
And then that was it. It was it. That was it for the whole for the mall. And then,
yeah, no.
And it turned into a huge Menards.
It's a Menards now.
Huge Menards. Like a double. Two-story Menards.
There it is. Big, giant Menards now. Wow, but that was a very creepy experience for me that night, Garrett, I got to tell you.
Yeah, it was empty, and then all the teenage kids, we called it the Bremerton 500, because on Friday, Saturday night, no one had anything to do out in the suburbs, so we drove around the whole mall, in life, and the cops would all watch it, watch you and everything. And,
that's hilarious. That's great. That's great. Thanks for sharing that, Garrett. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the memory, man.
All right, buddy. Take care. The old Bremerton Mall is now Menards.
The Bremerton 500. That's great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. We are talking about crazy theme parks and rides, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Maybe we'll get into abandoned malls, too. All right. The Nick DiGilio Show continuing on 720 WGN.
Well, I heard Steve Earle had lots of wives, about as many as cats have lives. Let him on his records, and we're good friends. He writes a song for everyone. They fall in love, and before it's done, he writes an even better one when it ends.
All right. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio here till 4 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. It's Wednesday. That's Wildcard Wednesday. That's the theme. You pick the songs that we listen to every morning coming back from breaks and news. We have a theme each morning. Today is Wednesday, so it's Wildcard Wednesday, which means any artist, any song, anything. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Greg in Buffalo Grove. It's a it's the song Steve Earle by Sugarland.
Yeah. It's Nick DiGilio here, and coming up at 3:30, it's Know Your Onion. Tom's your host, and we take two callers. They come in. Each contestant plays a solo round, and they have to identify whether or not a news headline that's read by Tom is real or from the satirical comedy fake news paper, The Onion. So news is very weird. Real news is very weird right now, and it's hard to tell the difference. So we play Know Your Onion every Wednesday morning at 3:30, and we will do that. If you want to jump in, call at 3:30 at that time. Right now, if you want to jump in, we are talking about crazy theme parks and weird, crazy rides. If you have any memories about that, 312-981-7200. Also, the Blackhawks Express will be played later on from last night's game. All right. We've been talking about some weird theme parks that have closed. Some are, a couple of them are still open, but... Dreamland was just too ambitious for reality. Shorpy on Pinterest did a magnificent job of coloring a black and white photo from 1909. Dreamland was Coney Island's most ambitious theme park, existing a short 7 years between 1904 and 1911. Dreamland was insane. It had artificial Venetian canals and gondola rides, trains through a Swiss Alpine landscape with artificial snow in freaking 1904, an end-of-the-world performance imitating the eruption of Vesuvius, and a fire drama in which 2,000 people quenched a six-story building fire every half an hour, and the fire was real. They set the building on fire every half an hour. It led to Dreamland's demise, though, how big it was. According to Westland, a new attraction called Hellgate, a boat ride through underworld-inspired caverns, caught fire on May 26, 1911. A new high-tech water system was recently installed to prevent accidental fires, but the plumbing failed, and all of Dreamland was consumed in tragic, unintentional flames. That sounds nuts. Hellgate?
Fun for the whole family.
Let's take a ride on Hellgate. That sounds nuts, man. Wow. The heavens stopped smiling upon Heritage USA. This is next. Heritage USA was a Christian theme park and residential complex in Fort Mill, South Carolina. It was built by televangelist Jim Baker and his wife Tammy Faye Baker. I do remember this. In 1986, this was quite the happening place. Then, according to Gizmondo, cracks emerged in Jim Baker's squeaky clean television persona. Scandals resurfaced regarding Baker's fundraising efforts to build a park hotel, and the IRS revoked the park's tax-exempt status as a house of worship, quote-unquote. Then Hurricane Hugo demolished the park's buildings in 1989, and Heritage USA permanently closed its doors. I do remember Heritage USA.
Jim Baker, man.
He was he and Tammy Faye, that was quite a story. We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
Quite a story. How about this? NARA Dreamland was once a Disney parallel universe. Even if its heyday, NARA was a lawsuit waiting to happen. Strutting through the park grounds were adults in costumes overwhelmingly similar to Disney princesses and characters from the Mickey Mouse family. It's one thing to be inspired by someone else's ideas. An imitation is a sincere form of flattery, but this was really crossing boundary into copyright infringement. But lawyers did not need to become involved as nature took its course. Attendance gradually fell between the late 90s and early 2000s, and Nara was no more in 2006. I wonder if we can get some pictures of the mascot costumes from Nara. Maybe if you just Google, like, Nara Dreamland costumes and see how close they are to the classic Disney characters. Nothing. And you know how I feel about mascots, and you know how I feel about mascots that have, like, really stupid costumes. That makes me even happier than regular mascot costumes. Let's see. Here's Vic on WGNI. Vic.
How you doing?
All right.
I'm looking right now at my 1920 Riverview free pass.
Oh, free pass from 1920 at Riverview.
Okay, I'll read it off. Season 1920, Chicago Riverview, Western Belmont, Clybourne Rescue, Wooded Wonderland with a million mirth makers, May through September. 19, a fantastic fairland with a full measure fountain. Admit one at gate. War tax 3 cents.
Ah.
For World War One, they still had a war tax that you would pay payable the week and Saturday and Sunday, August 7th and 8th. Good till 6 p.m. only. Theo Schmidt, secretary owner.
Wow. That's so. How long have you had that since 1920?
Yeah, I was in line at the time, you know, and I missed thing. But also, I've heard a few times that Disney was there before he ever opened his place, because that would be a natural place to go.
Yeah.
And then I've heard the other thing with Lincoln, that Robert Todd Lincoln was at the World's Columbian Exposition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Wow.
That's a piece of history there.
That's quite a piece of history right there. A pass to Riverview from 1920. Wow. Thank you, Vic, for sharing that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, you know, people of a certain age, you know, and like I said, this is my parents' generation especially, have so many stories about Riverview. Like, it must have been insane. It must have been such a great place. I've seen pictures because they, you know, obviously they're, you know, they took many, many pictures of Riverview, and it was a very cool looking place. And obviously very, very popular and, you know, legendary among people who grew up in Chicago at that particular time. So, yeah. All right. How about Chippewa Lake Park served as the set of a horror movie? Chippewa Lake was a thriving theme park for an entire century, from 1878 to 1978. Then it was left to rot. Looks pretty spooky, right? Well, director Jay Wolfell would tend to agree. The horror film Closed for the Season, shot in 2008 and released in 2010, had several scenes that take place with the long-closed amusement park and feature many of the park's decaying rides as backgrounds. Unfortunately, the film was a critical failure. Any amateur directors with an eye for horror are welcome to stage a drama upon Chippewa Lake's remnants and perhaps pay this historical spooky site proper homage. Have you ever seen Closed for the Season?
Closed for the Season? No.
Can you IMDb it? It's directed by J.J.A.Y. Wolfell, W-O-E-L-F-E-L. I've never seen it.
It's not super well reviewed, I won't lie to you.
Yeah.
2010 got a resounding 3 on IMDb.
Oh wow.
Oof.
Anybody in it of note? I would doubt. Is there anybody in the cast that we may recognize?
Let's see. Amy Brooks?
Mhm.
Yeah, no. Nobody.
Okay.
I'll just total just no. Nah.
Well, there it is. Poor Jay Wolfell and Closed for the Season, but that seems like a great idea. at an actual abandoned old amusement park that's very, very creepy. That seems like a pretty cool place to shoot a movie. All right, maybe somebody will come up with a better idea or a better script. Get out to Chippewa Falls and shoot that horror movie. Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in here. Do you have any weird amusement park or theme park stories? Do you have any great ride stories? 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. The Nick DiGilio Show continues in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4 on this Wednesday morning. At 4 o'clock, we'll head over to the TV side and hear some early morning TV news from WGN-TV. And then Bob Surratt at 5 o'clock with your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the number if you would like to join us. We're talking about theme parks and weird rides and just memories and stuff like that. 312-981-7200. We're also getting ready for after 3:30. You call in. First two people in are our contestants for another round of Know Your Onion. Okay. 312 sends in a text. Wildwood, New Jersey. Maury's Pier. In the boardwalk, on the boardwalk, still has some rides from my childhood. I'm 56 years old. It's not that weird, but it's still a great independent. Um, 708 says, sends in a text. We used to do the Bremerton Mall cruise where we'd drive around the mall at night blasting our music and then head across the street and hang out at the White Castle. That sounds like an evening right there. Yeah, that sounds like quite an evening right there. Blast music, drive around in the Bremerton Mall, and then go to hang out at the White Castle. There you go. There's a typical teenage night as somebody who lives in Tinley Park, Bremerton Mall. 773 says the theme parks that we enjoyed were Funtown and Santa's Village. Funtown had a cool jingle that can be seen on YouTube. Well, we're going to have to look that up. Santa's Village, is that still around? I think Santa's Village is still around because I remember when Santa's Village was the amusement park. This was just a few years ago. It was like a combination of an amusement park, and I think like they had animals and stuff there. But I think Santa's Village was closed for a while, and then they moved. Because if I remember correctly, Santa's Village was in West Dundee, Illinois. And then they closed down for a while and then reopened at a different location. And then for a while, we were running commercials right here on WGN some years back where it was now called Santa's Village Amusement Park because they added animals to the amusement park stuff. But I don't know if it's still, I don't know if Santa's Village is still around. The old Santa's Village was great. That was a lot of fun. I've been there. I went there several times when I was a kid. But yeah, I don't know if the amusement park is still around. Tom, can you go to YouTube and look up Funtown? Like Funtown Amusement Park. This texter says that they have a cool jingle that you can see on YouTube. This was for an amusement park that they went to called Funtown. Now, I have never been to Funtown. I don't remember Funtown, but maybe they have a really, you got to love their jingle.
For the kids and you, 95th and Stony Island Avenue.
Fun sounds like a great time for all at Funtown, Chicago's largest amusement park. This weekend is Funtown's grand opening celebration. Be part of the excitement. Funny clowns, free balloons, and door prizes. See this Friday Sun-Times newspaper for a free popcorn coupon. Big fun and games, over 30 rides and attractions all weekend. Friday at 6:30, Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Grand opening celebration all weekend at Funtown.
Funtown, Funtown for the kids and you. 95th and Stony Island.
95th and Stony Island.
That is a great jingle. Funtown. Holy cow.
I like the guy's voice, too.
What was the first part of it?
Funny clowns. Well, he said funny clowns and balloons. Oh, funny clowns and balloons. As opposed to what? Scary clowns or sad clowns and balloons?
I love that. Fun town for the kids and you.
Yeah.
95th and Stony Island Avenue.
Yeah.
Genius.
Great stuff. I do not remember Fun Town. Never been to Fun Town. Good jingle, though. The listener was correct. The texter was correct. That was pretty fantastic jingle right there.
You win nothing, but
thanks. Yeah, you don't win anything, but yeah. Here's our good friend Doc. Hey, Doc.
Hey, man. Hey, yeah, I'll take you down memory lane. In Kansas City, there was a park called Fairyland Park, and it opened in 1923 and closed in 77
mm-hmm.
when the Hunt family that owns the Chiefs opened up a theme park and a water theme park.
Oh.
But it was classic. They had a one-mile wooden roller coaster called the Wildcat, Haunted House, Tunnel of Love, all that stuff. But we only went once a year for my dad's annual union picnic. They were the sheet metal workers,
uh-huh.
and it would be hundreds of these guys, hundreds of kids, moms, and they had an ocean of pole barns for all these groups that would go there, you know, dirt floor, wooden picnic tables, you
yeah.
know, 20 foot to the roof, and everything was free. You know, the men are drinking beer like they're outlawing it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And kids, you only did it once a year. All the hot dogs, pop, I don't remember Coke or Pepsi, but I remember every flavor, orange, grape, black cherry,
right.
cherry, strawberry,
right.
Kickapoo joy juice, in stock tanks with block ice, guys chipping it up with an ice pick, and then all the paper cups of ice cream you could eat, you know, with a flat wooden spoon.
Right.
But my other big memory was these sheet metal workers were animals. I mean, my dad was 5'6", 150, and if you got in a handshake contest, he'd have you on your knees crying to let your hand go. And these guys would get drunk and go out and just look for every feet of strength thing in the park. You know, the big wooden sledgehammer, ring
right.
the bell,
right.
and
right.
machines you could arm wrestle and grip meters, and every guy has beaten every one of them. And it was just a fond memory.
Yeah, that's great.
And they had a separate swimming pool, and they had the first twin drive-in in Kansas City.
Wow.
But they had some storm damage, and they closed in 77.
Yeah. Wow, those are good memories, though, Doc.
All right, man. All right,
buddy. Take care. Here's Bill. Bill, you took your kids to Fun Town?
Yeah, I live on the south side, and I've been living here since 65, and my kids were born in 64 and 66. And we used to go to Fun Town. We'd take the bus over to the 95th and Stony Island.
Yeah.
And we used to have a block club we lived on, and one Saturday, I forget what year it was, probably in the early 70s, the wife and I took every kid on the block to Fun Town that day. We must have had about 30 kids with us.
Wow.
Because you could pay one fee and all the rides and everything are free. It was like Riverview. I think I remember back, it was like $3 to get in or $5, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was really, you know, but expensive then.
Yeah, but not expensive now.
That time, right.
Yeah, no, that
right,
sounds great. That sounds like
yeah,
a lot of fun.
Did you hear that Disneyland is $154 now to get in?
Doesn't surprise me at all. What's that? How much is it to get into Six Flags? Great America.
I haven't been. I've never been to Six Flags.
Yeah. My guess is it's at least $50 to get in. At least.
Right. But can you imagine $154 a person to go to Disneyland?
Oh, man. They're making it. Like Disney needs more money.
Yeah, right.
So, all right, Bill. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Jill is on WGN. Hi, Jill.
So there's an amusement park called Indiana Beach in Monticello,
oh, yeah.
Indiana.
I've been there. Yeah.
Okay, so I've been going there since I was two. And now I take my family. And they used to have this ride called the Twister. Do you remember the Twister?
Describe it, because, yeah.
So it looked like a tilt-a-whirl, but the cars didn't move, so you had to, like, climb into this. You could either sit in the back or the front. And I told Tom about this. If you Google Evil Twister at Indiana Beach, you'll get to see it. Somebody's, you know, homemade video. And it was, but the thing is, the ride controller would control your individual car. So, yeah, you're spinning along, but then the ride operator could choose your car and just spin it like crazy.
Oh.
And we would just laugh so hard because you would just be plastered against,
yeah,
you know, your car, and you couldn't breathe. And, you know, I don't think they could get away with it nowadays, but it was just so much fun. Like, you'd almost black out, but it was hilarious, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just, you know, and it's just, just was one of those great memories of, like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, talking about spinning yourself silly.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Twister at Indiana Beach. We'll have to look that up. Yeah, no, yeah. I've been to, I don't remember Twister, but I've been to Indiana Beach several times. It was a very cool place. Still around, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Jill.
Sure.
Okay. Bye. Well, there you go.
Get this for prices to Six Flags. For a single ticket, single day ticket, $80.
Man.
But here's what's really a kick in the keister. So you get, or you can either get a season pass for $81.99. And that's for the full season. Or now they have a subscription model to be a member.
Uh-huh.
$7 a month. The low, low price of $7 a month. If you'd be a member. What is happening?
A season pass is $81, but a day pass, a single day pass, single day ticket is $80?
Is $80.
That's ridiculous. That's insane. Wow.
Bonkers.
Wow. Okay. All right. There's a reason why I haven't been to Six Flags in like 20 years. Man, oh, man. Okay. All right. Phone lines are open now, and I want you to call so you can be a contestant playing Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open right now. Call in. First two listeners in will be our contestants for this morning rounds of Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200. So call in now. First two people in will be our contestants. Know Your Onion is a game that we play. Tom's your host. He will read you a series of news headlines, and you have to guess as to whether they are real or from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. And if you do that, if you get the majority of them correct, you're a winner. So 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open. First two people through will be our contestants for Know Your Onion here on 720 WGN as the Nick DiGilio Show continues. Right here.
You know the night time now.
Holiday.
Is the right time.
Holiday.
To be.
Holiday.
With the one you love now.
Holiday.
And I hope it.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio. We are here until 4 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. It is Wednesday. We do have a Blackhawks Express coming up in just a few minutes. It's not a good one. Hawks lost again. It's been a rough stretch. These guys got to get going here. But we always play back the Blackhawks Express the morning after a Blackhawks game. So that's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the Nick DiGilio Show every Wednesday at 3:30 a.m. After the 3:30 a.m., we play a little game called Know Your Onion. This is where Tom Hush, my producer and the host of Know Your Onion, will read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or from The Onion. All right, Tom, should we get the thing going here?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Ah, there it is. It's always interesting when the 60,000 people and the band show up. Every Wednesday. All right. We all know the rules. Tom, are you ready to go?
Let's do this.
All right. Here's our first contestant. It's Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hi. How you doing?
All right. You familiar with The Onion?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. All right. You just have to figure out whether these news headlines are real or from The Onion, which is a comedy fake satirical news newspaper.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go.
All right,
Jason. Your first headline... You're allowed to be naked sometimes, but not other times, says Brad Pitt in a baffling Oscars acceptance speech. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'll have to say that's The Onion.
Let's see. Very good, Jason. Right away.
He gave one of the best speeches of the night.
And that's great.
It wasn't baffling. It was really, really great. All right, good job. One for one, Jason.
All right, Jason, your next headline, free pornography offered to quarantined coronavirus cruise passengers. I'll say that one more time. Free pornography offered to quarantined coronavirus cruise passengers. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'll have to say that's The Onion again.
Let's see.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, no, that's
it
real.
It is very real. This coming to us from Fox Business, the Miami-based pornography site that tried to offer complimentary webcams to Kansas City Chiefs and San Francisco 49ers last month is attempting to ease boredom for passengers stuck aboard Princess Cruise's two quarantine vessels with free webcam sessions. That'll certainly keep you busy for a bit.
Oh, man. Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, that one doesn't surprise me. When I heard it, I was like, that's absolutely real. No question about it. Okay, you're 1-1, Jason. See what you do next.
All right, Jason, your next headline. Shorter skirts, disaster relief, and highlighting medals as bling might bring more women into the military. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'll have to say that's The Onion again.
Let's see.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's real.
It's a tough one.
That's real.
It's coming to us from the Ottawa Citizen. As part of efforts to entice females to serve, Canadian military officers are suggesting that highlighting the social and entertaining aspects of life in the ranks, as well as redesigning uniforms that women wear so skirts are shorter and slimmer.
Look at that.
Trying to help out the Canadian Army there.
Yeah. All right, Jason, you got to get this next one right, my friend.
All right.
Okay.
All right. It's do or die here, Jason. Your next headline. Thai fishermen find Iowa caucus results in the stomach of a tiger shark. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's got to be The Onion.
Very good, Jason.
Oh.
So that's where they went.
There you go.
That's where they went.
Okay, you got to get this one right. You're 2-2.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Your next headline. Embarrassed basketball player Ben Simmons retracts criticism of the Philadelphia Sixers after remembering that he's on the team. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's got to be The Onion.
Let's see. Woo-hoo! Wow, you did it, Jason.
Nice job.
Oh, wow.
Nice job, Jason. Very,
yeah,
very good.
Wow.
Very good. I was worried there for a little while, but all right. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Jason, hold the line. Stay on the line and hang on. We'll get to you in a little bit, okay? All right. No, successful first contestant. All right. Let's say hello to our second contestant, and it's Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning.
Morning. Okay. You know The Onion?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, here we go. You got to guess these correctly. Here we go.
Okay.
All right, Kathy, your first headline, a Missouri police officer told to tone down your gayness reaches $10 million settlement and gets a promotion. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to say that's The Onion.
Let's see.
No,
that is a very real headline.
Yeah, that's real. I heard about this.
It's coming to us from ABC News. A gay Missouri police officer won a historic $20 million judgment in a sexual orientation discrimination lawsuit, alleging he was told to tone down his gayness by a police commission board member.
Good for
him.
Good for him. Good for him. All right, Kathy, you got one wrong.
All right.
We don't want it to. You can't get two more wrong, or you won't win.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Your next headline. The cowboy thing is over, says rapper Lil Nas X, appearing on the red carpet dressed as a 17th century Puritan minister. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, I'm going to go Onion.
Let's see. Very good.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's an Onion headline right there if I've ever seen it.
All right, Kathy, you're 1-1. All right.
All right. Your next headline. Experts unable to determine why someone as rich as Justin Bieber even needs to believe in God anymore. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to go real.
Let's see.
Oh!
No, that is an Onion headline.
That's The Onion. Oh, no. Kathy, you can't get another one wrong.
All right.
You got to get the next two right. You got to get the next two right. Listen, well, we lost our other contestant. We lost Jason.
Well, he'll have to call back.
Jason, you got to call back. 312-981-7200. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Your next headline. The U.S. Army to use gamers' brainwaves to train military robot swarms. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I am going to go real.
Let's see. Very nice.
Yeah, of course that's real.
Very real.
Of course that's real.
Yeah, it's coming to us from Fox News. A group of experts wants to study the brainwaves and eye movements of people playing a video game in order to build an advanced AI that could coordinate actions of military robots.
Wow. We're in the future.
Finally.
We are in the future. All right, so Kathy's a 2-1, right? Two right, yep. One wrong?
Yep.
Okay, get one more right, and you're a winner, Kathy.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Your next headline. U.S. man wears plastic tent on a plane to avoid coronavirus. Again, U.S. man wears a plastic tent on a plane to avoid the coronavirus. Is that real or is that the Onion?
I'm going to say Onion.
Let's see. Ooh.
I didn't think an airline would allow that.
They're allowing they're allowing ponies on planes now as an emotional support animal. So, all right, where's that story from?
That's coming to us from News Hub New Zealand. Rick Peskovitz is the CEO of Stadium Pod, which produces plastic tents that are to be worn over the torso by sports spectators wishing to avoid the rain. The Cincinnati man tested the second use for his pods by wearing one on an aeroplane in light of the coronavirus outbreak.
Wow.
Isn't that odd?
Okay.
Isn't that so odd?
We are down to the last headline, Kathy.
All right.
Last headline. Here we go.
All right. And I want to remind Jason, you have to call back.
Jason, you got to call back or you don't get a prize. 312-981-7200, Jason. All right.
All right. Your final headline. Fertility clinic employee asks couple if they'd like to play with sperm out back and get to know it better. Is that real or is that the Onion?
I am going to go Onion.
Let's see.
Showing.
Very good. That's the Onion.
Hilarious. Oh, that's absolutely hilarious. Kathy, nice job.
Thank you.
You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60-Minute Men, visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. And Kathy, hang on, okay?
Okay, very good.
You
Thank
hold
you.
On. Jason, call back, because you can't win a prize if you don't call back. You were a winner. 312-981-7200. All right. Let's take a break here for the weather. And then we've got a Blackhawks Express to play. So we will do that. We'll take a break. I'll give you the weather. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll have the Blackhawks Express ready to go.
Blackhawks are back on Edmonton ice for the first and only time this season. And the Hawks' mission of piling up road points gets tougher, or does it? As injury has taken Connor McDavid out of the Oilers' lineup, it's now up to the Hawks to take full advantage of the most obvious roster omission on the season. And as you can hear by those puck sounds, we're already underway. Inside the Hawks' zone, Draisaitl crossing the high slot, turns and fires one toward the net. It was blocked. Ahead now to Drake Kajula, former Oiler, over the Edmonton line down the right wing. Spins into a check from Darnell Nurse. Put the puck down the boards in behind the net, but it's taken back by the Oilers. Riley Sheahan in over the hot line right wing. Drop past that. Cassian moves toward the net. They score. Sheahan at the top of the crease. Took a loose puck that deflected off of one of the Hawks. And with a yawning net, he was able to just close his eyes and stick it home. Not the start the Hawks were looking for. They're down 1-0. Nurse fires the backhand. Stopped by Murphy. Breakaway pass to Kane over the Oiler line. Takes it now into the right circle. Put it in front. Brandon Saad shoots and scores! Brandon Saad, his second goal in as many games off of a feed from Patrick Kane. And the Hawks have tied the game at 1 with 14:04 left in period number 1. 1:12 on the Oiler power play. Oilers come out of their end. Yamamoto, center ice over the logo. Put it ahead in over the Hawk line. Here's Chiasson along the near boards. At the point, defenseman Klefbom falls down. Taves takes the puck to Carpenter over the Oiler line to Taves. Right circle, shoots and scores! A shorthanded goal for Jonathan Taves. And you can see it developing from even way up here. A nice takeaway, double team by the Hawks at the Hawk blue line. secured the puck. Carpenter wheeling into the Oilers' zone along the left boards, looked and found Taves, and a one-timer from the right circle beat Smith. Dreisaitl, right wing corner. Here he is now, bottom of the right wing circle, jams it through the crease, was intended for Chiasson on the other side. It's off his stick. Dreisaitl strokes one on goal from the right circle. Turned wide by Leonard. The rebound, they score. Following up is Kyler Yamamoto, who picked up a rebound. Leonard can only stop so many. And the rebound was taken by Yamamoto from the rim of the left wing circle, and he fired it past Robin Leonard. It's a power play goal and ties the score at two. Kane to center ice. You know where the Oiler line, right wing side, Kane fed it across, a shot from Boquist, he scores! From the left wing circle, Adam Boquist rips one past Mike Smith, and a perfect setup by Patrick Kane. He didn't even look over there. He knew that Boquist was going to be in that left circle. Boquist scores his fourth goal on the season and gives the Hawks a 3-2 lead. Yeah, now Nugent Hopkins for the right circle. Hawks zone shoots. They score. It was Yamamoto actually fishing that puck out from underneath Robin Leonard's pads. Yamamoto was persistent, and he pushed it over the goal line for his second goal of the game and ties the score at three. Nugent Hopkins, Hawks zone to Dreisaitl, left circle. Nugent Hopkins in front. They score. The number one power play in the league connects for the second time in three power play tries. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at the top of the crease, a little give and go with Dreisaitl. And the Oilers have retaken the lead at 4-3. To Gustafson, high slot, back to Kane for a one-timer. Glove save made by Smith. He dishes over to Yamamoto, who clears it up the far side. Dreisaitl will knock it down ice into the Hawks zone. And Boquist back to get it with 10 seconds to break it left wing center ice. Send it across, intended for Gustafson. Dreisaitl took it away and fires it into the empty Hawk net. And that's going to seal the deal for the Oilers. 2.9 seconds left in the hockey game. It's the Oilers 5 and the Hawks 3.
I'm just a woman, a lonely woman, waiting on a weary shore. I'm just a woman, that's only human, one you should be sorry for. Got up this morning, along about dawn, without a warning, I found he was gone. Why should it do it?
Oh, Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested that?
It's coming to you from Nick's dad.
Yeah. And tell everybody who that is.
That is Annette Hanshaw, Am I Blue, from 1929. And I believe your dad said that she is a beautiful girl, a real looker.
Yeah.
Yeah. You dirty dog.
Oh, man. We're wrapping up here with some more crazy theme parks and rides and stuff. And if you want to jump in, we can read some of your texts before we get out of here and hand it over to WGN TV News over at Bradley Place. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. How about this one? You can swim with alligators at Crocosaurus Cove. Have you ever wanted to look a crocodile straight in the eye while simultaneously swimming underwater? Well, your dream can be realized at Crocosaurus Cove in the heart of Darwin, Australia. Yeah, the shocker, that's in Australia. The homepage of the park's website advertises the aptly named Cage of Death, in which glass is the only barricade between human and vicious reptile. I don't care how strong that glass is, I wouldn't enter it for all the money in the world, they say. All right. How about Lithuania's Soviet theme park? You can pay to be interrogated by the faux KGB. So you can get through, they throw you in a room and they interrogate you. How about this? Haw Par Villa houses life-size dioramas depicting moralistic myths. Haw Par Villa, once known as Tiger Balm Gardens, is a massive theme park in Singapore. According to VisitSingapore.com, the park contains over 1,000 statues and 150 full-scale dioramas whose contents are derived from ancient Chinese folklore and literature. Apparently, many Singapore's attendants are brought here by children, brought as children by their parents to be immersed in the teachings of traditional Chinese morality. The park stages some rather absurd scenes from bowing sumo wrestlers to animals chatting on telephones. How about this? Ferrari World. Is it a tie-in with the movie? Leave it to Abu Dhabi to create an entire theme park devoted to Italian luxury sports cars. It's like a massive shrine to commercialism. But if you are a coaster freak, there's one beacon of light at Ferrari World. Since 2010, Ferrari World has boasted the Formula Rosa, which is the world's fastest roller coaster. If you ride this death-defying contraption, you will be flung forward, reaching the maximum speed of 149 miles per hour in less than 5 seconds. Oh, man. All right, well, there you go. All right, how about X-Carat Theme Park merges ancient Mayan history and contemporary fun? How about this? Colombians love coffee so much they made a theme park about it. So there you go. And then you can see an animatronic Jesus perform the resurrection in Tierra Santa. Tierra Santa is yet another Christian-centric theme park located in Argentina. There's a faux Jerusalem fitted with 500 lifelike plastic figures depicting Romans, Gentiles, Jews, and biblical legends. So there's some weird theme parks for you to check out. What do we got tomorrow? Jim Ryan, right?
Jim Ryan,
music critic Jim Ryan, music writer Jim Ryan with us tomorrow.